about.
You gotta put it in the
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
V.I.G.
Ah!
Ralph is a hater, hater. Ralph is a hater, is a hater.
Well, you're entitled to your opinion, but you're so wrong.
Maybe we should try adjusting your medication again.
And what was it like working with Brian Eno?
Brian Eno?
Yeah.
I have not worked with Brian Eno.
Really?
Yeah.
And now.
Ew is making me sick.
I know. I think I'm going to go throw up.
No fear. I want to go throw up too.
Our feature presentation.
That's so nice. That's the way you want to start. Morning, everybody. It's a brand new Kevin and Bean show. It is Tuesday, the 11th of February.
What's going on, you guys? What's happening?
Just a lot of fog.
Yeah.
Oh, foggy this morning?
Yeah, seriously, right outside the station, yeah.
So back to back, a little bit of rain and a little bit of fog. It's like you're living in a place with weather all of a sudden.
We don't like it.
It is. It is the worst in the history of human civilization.
I'm so upset.
I don't know how you survive it. I bet there are people in New England right now who are weeping for you with how tough this winter has been
exactly.
For Southern California.
Thank you. I'm glad somebody is finally coming to that realization.
Hey, it's been a while since we've done this. Maybe this is the first time in 2014, but it's time for a little How's the Story End?
How does the story end, my friend? Friend, how does the story end?
And this is actually extra exciting because this is also one of the rare follow-ups that we've been lucky enough to have on a 5:30 a.m. story. You guys remember the case back in November of Mr. David Eckert. He lives in Deming, New Mexico, in Hidalgo County, and he was pulled over, and a police dog indicated to the officer that Mr. Eckert had drugs on him.
Right.
Police officer also didn't like the way Mr. Eckert was standing as he was outside of his car with what the police officer described as his butt cheeks clenched together as if he had something keistered.
Yep.
So do you remember what they did with David Eckert? Do you remember how his night went?
Yes.
I don't remember
They
that.
Kept searching in his keister for the drugs, but they couldn't find him, right?
He was anally probed 8 times over the course of 14 hours.
They just knew he had him.
They just, no matter how many times the doctor went in there and looked and came out with nothing, no matter how many x-rays, enemas, he had a surgical colonoscopy. Remember the cop
Holy
just kept...
cow!
Remember they went to the district attorney and said, hey, we need to sign off on this so we can do a surgical colonoscopy? And the guy said, okay, if you're saying he's got drugs on him, let's find those drugs. And they just kept going over and over and over again. Well, it turned out he didn't have any drugs on him, and the police dog was wrong. So he sued the city and the county there in New Mexico, and yesterday they announced a settlement. So when I ask you, how does the story end, how much money did David Eckert get for 14 hours, including 8 anal probes from the city and county?
How does the story end?
I would say the story ends... Well, wow, if he really didn't have anything, I would say he got a couple of $1 million.
You say $2 million?
Yeah.
That's your fee? All right.
Well,
what do you think
to
there,
subtract
Lisa?
Subtract the cost of the free colonoscopy, because those are expensive.
Good point.
By the way, I'm glad you brought that up, because let's also remember at the time of the story in November that the hospital that performed all of the rectal exams also sent him a bill for $6,000.
Oh.
It's not mentioned in this article if that's also been resolved, but he does still have a lawsuit against the hospital and against the doctors that performed the procedures. So this is the city and the county. Kevin says $2 million. What you got, Lisa?
You know, it's New Mexico, and that makes me think less, like $500,000.
All right, it's always a mistake, but let's give Beer Mug a shot at it. I think orange.
$500 million.
There you go.
That's a great guess.
Whoever's closest.
How does the story end?
Once again, Kevin wins, ladies and gentlemen. He's very good at this game. $1.6 million is how much the man got from the city and the county.
That doesn't seem crazy to me. That
now,
seems nuts.
Knowing that, I'd do that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Right? Yeah, look, it's a miserable 14 hours. But, I mean, you're out the next morning, and you have $1.6 million.
Isn't it?
What's that?
What? That's how you treat Al-Qaeda. Waterboard, just put him through this thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah,
wow.
No kidding. He did release a statement, by the way. I feel that I got some justice, as I think the settlement shows they were wrong to do what they did to me. I truly hope that no one will be treated like this ever again. I felt very helpless and alone that night. My family and I hope that people understand that I don't want my face linked with jokes related to anal probing. For this reason, I asked my attorneys to issue this statement in the hopes that the media will respect my privacy. Well, good luck with that.
Oh, my God, that's crazy.
But he does bring up one interesting point, though, in his statement, which is it's easy, Kevin, for us to say, yeah, sign me up for that. I know I'll be out in 14 hours. This guy didn't know that, and he suffered the terror of what's going to happen next, and are they going to send me to jail, and, you know.
But he did have the knowledge that there were no drugs in there.
He did.
So he knew eventually it would have to turn in his favor. He probably thought around anal probe 5.
But when you're being tortured, you don't assume necessarily that your captors are going to show you mercy. You know what I mean? He didn't know how much worse it was going to get.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's not.
I'm saying he had mental terror.
Cover up their tracks.
Yeah, exactly. He had mental terror that you and I wouldn't have if we knew going in that this was just a deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, $1.6 million so far. That's what he's got, and that, my friends, is how the story ends.
That's how the story ends.
That's not what you want.
I don't think so.
I'm going to go right out on a limb and say that. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
There isn't like a real ton of humor in it.
How do you know?
No.
Bean yesterday took the bullet for the team and watched Olympic curling.
Aw, Bean. Thank you.
How much? Well, every 4 years, we discuss the fact that how crazy it is that curling not only exists today, but that has existed as a sport for more than 500 years.
Yeah, and all over the world, it's a big deal. And to us, we go, how is that a thing?
Yeah,
it's shuffleboard on ice, is what it is.
It's not, by the way.
Really? Are those kind of
ill advised? I think you're mistaken. Also on the program today, we have Petros Papadakis.
Oh, yeah.
He's not talking about that BS Bachelor again, is he?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if we can wrestle that topic away from him, but we're going to try to talk some sports with him as well.
All right.
But I think he is going to, he and Ralph are going to probably talk a little about The Bachelor. And we have Barkhad Abdi.
Oh, he's the captain now.
He's the guy in Captain Phillips. It's I am the captain now.
Yes.
So we've got him in the studio as well. We'll take a break. We'll come back with the Showbiz Beat next. 106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 551.
Quick reminder, K-Rock's World Tour 2014 destination number 2 is off and running. We'd like to get you on the standby boarding list at 9:10 this morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show. This time, you get to go see Lollapalooza in Sao Paulo, Brazil. How many different locations do they do Lollapalooza now, Kevin?
I don't know. 3?
4.5.
That sounds about right.
I think.
Of course, the one in America is in Chicago, but this sounds even better. Sao Paulo, Brazil, 9:10 this morning, and then again at 12:10, 3:10, and 6:10. All those times, all week long, you can get on the standby boarding list. Details at krock.com. Hey, Ralph Garman.
Hey!
What's going on?
Crazy whatnot.
I love crazy whatnot.
For those of you who missed it yesterday, the greatest moment on television history happened. Nothing more entertaining for me in a long, long time than watching a fatuous, blowhard entertainment reporter Sam Rubin from KTLA just squirm his giant head just exploding.
Hey, easy with the giant head comedy.
Yeah, well, you people all stick together. I mean you people.
Yeah.
He was interviewing Samuel L. Jackson, the legend, for his new movie RoboCop. And he decided to show off his how hip he was, how with it he was, how well-informed he was by going off script and congratulating Sam on his big Super Bowl commercial.
Super Bowl commercial?
Yeah, that was Sam's reaction. Here's the problem. Samuel L. Jackson didn't have a Super Bowl commercial. Lawrence Fishburne, however, did have a Super Bowl commercial where he praised his role as Morpheus from the Matrix movies.
That's right.
And he did a parody of the old red pill, blue pill gag with the red key and blue key for that car commercial. Now, after the fact, Sam Rubin started spinning his wheel, saying, "Well, there was a Captain America commercial on just before the Super Bowl." Nah, shut up. No.
It's not what you thought.
No, stop it. Shut up. No one's buying it. Samuel L. Jackson didn't appreciate the fact that he was mistaken for Lawrence Fishburne, understandably so, especially given the historic "they all look alike" phenomenon.
Right.
That so many dumb white people have fallen prey to over the years. Anyway, it's just audio magic. We're going to play it in its entirety. It's about 2 minutes of audio. Please sit back, relax, enjoy Sam Rubin getting lambasted by Mr. Samuel L. Jackson.
Working for Marvel, the Super Bowl commercial. Did you get a lot of reaction to that Super Bowl commercial?
What Super Bowl commercial?
Oh, you know what? I've been my mistake.
You're as crazy as the people on Twitter.
Right.
I'm not Lawrence Fishburne.
That's my fault. Oh, I know boy. That. That was my fault. My mistake. You know what?
We don't all look alike.
Flava, you're exactly
right. We may be all black and famous.
You
but
are
we all
guilty.
Don't look alike.
I am guilty. I am guilty.
He thought you were Bob Dylan.
Right.
You're the entertainment reporter.
I know.
You're the entertainment reporter for this station.
Flava.
And you don't know the difference between me and Lawrence Fishburne?
My mistake. I apologize. Really, my big mistake. Let's talk about.
That must be a very short line for your job.
I'll say it. No, it probably would not be hard to get another person to sit right here. Let's talk about RoboCop.
Oh hell no!
Really? Really?
I apologize.
I'm the other guy. I'm the other guy. The other one. What's in your wallet?
Right. That's it. That's exactly right.
There's more than one black guy doing a commercial.
There it is. No question about that.
I'm the what's in your wallet black guy.
Okay.
He's the car black guy.
There it is.
Morgan Freeman is the other credit card black guy. You only hear his voice, though, so there. You probably won't confuse him with Lawrence Fishburne.
You're 100% right. To RoboCop,
there's
you
a heavyweight black guy that's like putting cash down in the seats in a baseball stadium, but he's also the black guy that turns off the house, the water, and the lights when his kid tells him the house is cool. Right. I'm not that guy either.
Do we want to do a list of all the people that you're not?
And I've actually never done a McDonald's or a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial.
Fair enough.
I know that's surprising.
Right. Fair enough.
Oh, man.
To the original...
And I'm the only black guy in RoboCop that's not a criminal.
Okay.
Other than Michael K. White.
Spectacular.
Oh, here we go. It's on.
No, it's not.
Race war.
It's not a race war.
Race war's on, everybody.
Nope.
It's going down.
Nope.
It's going down. It's
not that race at all.
Come on.
No.
Race war.
No, it's not that at all. It's just one dumb white guy. I love how he just keeps trying to just to run roughshod over Sam Jackson. Just, no, come on. Hey, okay, yeah. Oh, no. All right, that was my mistake. Yeah, whose mistake was it?
Yeah.
Wasn't his. No, I mean, about RoboCop. Get the sense his
Let's
coworkers...
Let's talk about anything else.
You get the sense the workers at KTLA just hate his guts? Because nobody's laughing harder than the rest of the staff there at KTLA. The rest of the people working at the anchor desk are just losing their mind over Sam getting beat up by Samuel L. Jackson. So... Excellent, excellent stuff.
That's sweet.
Speaking of Lawrence Fishburne, now which one is he?
He's the other one.
He's the commercial one, right?
Yes.
Okay.
With the giant head.
He has joined ABC's comedy pilot Black-ish.
Blackish.
Blackish.
Okay.
They're doing.
Is that going to help?
I don't know.
It's not going to make it easier for Sam Rubin.
No, it won't. Because now he's going to get Lawrence Fishburne confused with Anthony Anderson, who's the star of the show.
Ah.
And he'll say, Anthony, what was it like to be in that movie with Keanu Reeves? Anthony Anderson will play a upper-middle-class black man struggling to raise his kids with a sense of cultural identity despite contradictions and obstacles coming from his liberal wife. And his kids are colorblind. They don't feel particularly black. They're just kids. And they've got plenty of white friends and Hispanic friends. And Anthony Anderson is trying to instill in them a little sense of where they come from. Lawrence Fishburne will play his old school father. Sounds like a very funny concept, and I'm looking forward to seeing Samuel L. Jackson in that. Should be good.
It's Lawrence Fishburne.
Heidi Klum. She's a coug. She's a cougar.
Is she a cougar?
She's got it going on. She, after she left husband Seal, she was famously in a relationship with her former bodyguard, Martin Kristen. Well, that relationship is now over, and she was seen out at Bootsy Bellows. You know the Bootsy Bellows.
I don't know what that is.
Kevin, Bootsy Bellows.
Bootsy?
Restaurant? It's a nightclub. It's the hip nightclub. Happening place for all the kids in Hollywood.
Obviously.
Obviously. She was seen at Bootsy Bellows with a guy named Vito Schnabel,
who
I think was a Bond villain. I'm not sure. So, Vito Schnabel, we meet again. Yes, Mr. Bond. Heidi is 40 years old. Vito Schnabel, 27 years old.
All right. Nice work.
So, Vito wins, right? Heidi Klum at 40 trumps most other girls at 25,
sure.
Right?
I agree. Yeah.
His previous relationship was with Demi Moore, by the way, back in 2012. So he's got a type. He likes him old and rich.
All right.
Good for you, Vito Schnabel.
Pays to be a personal trainer. We learned that.
Yes. Is that what he does? Is he a personal trainer?
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's their workout partner.
I have no idea who Vito Schnabel is.
Workout partner.
I don't follow the... I don't have Vito Schnabel as one of my Twitter
it's not
follows.
Your Google alert.
Open up a blog.
Google alert. And I wish I could tell you the name of this TV show because I really want to see it, but I don't think I can.
It's worse than Blackish?
You mean you can't say it on the air?
Yeah.
Oh. What does it rhyme with?
The Canadian Broadcasting Corporation has given the go-ahead to a new Canadian series that hopefully will be picked up by somebody here in the States and shown us, starring Eugene Levy.
Oh, really?
It's a sitcom starring Eugene Levy. His
famous Canadian.
Yes. His wife will be played by Catherine O'Hara, another famous Canadian. They made their bones on SCTV, which was a Canadian TV show, sort of their version of Saturday Night Live. It was very popular. They play a family who used to be very wealthy, and then they lose all their money, and they have to move to the tiny rural town they bought as a joke. To help rebuild their lives.
They bought as a joke.
Yeah, they did it as a goof, and now that's the only property they've left, and they end up moving back to this tiny rural town. And the name of the series is named after Eugene's character, who apparently his last name is S-C-H-I-T-T.
Okay, all right. Good.
So if I'm telling you that's his name and I've spelled it out, can I say what his last name is?
I mean... You're certainly not saying the word that it sounds exactly
like. You're talking
like.
About the title of the show?
Right.
Yeah.
This is getting us into the Phuket, Thailand kind of difficulty, isn't it?
It is. So I'm torn. Maybe I'll just let it be. Anyway, it's S Creek is the name of the town because it's named after him.
I like it.
So
that's hilarious.
It's like Shites Creek, only right. It's his name, S-C-H-I-T-T.
I like it.
So I look forward to seeing that with a different
I
title
bet it's good.
Here in the U.S. Today's celebrity birthdays. Taylor Lautner is 22 years old today. Aubrey O'Day from Danity Kane turns 30. Kelly Rowland from Destiny's Child is 33. Brandy, singer, actress. You know her as Moesha, 35 years old. Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park in Fort Minor is 37 years old. Kelly Slater, the surfer legend, is 42. Damian Lewis, we loved him on Life and on Homeland. Great actor, Band of Brothers, 43 years old. Jennifer Aniston is 45 today. Sheryl Crow is 52. Actor Burt Reynolds is 78 years old. And Tina Louise, one of the last of the castaways from Gilligan's Island, celebrates her 80th birthday today. Oh, hope she gets off the island soon because the health care on that island was just not up to snuff.
That was just a TV
I don't
show.
Think you can even sign up for Obamacare there on the island. Unless,
isn't it just her and Marianne? That's it? That's all that's left?
Unless the professor has made some sort of internet thing out of a coconut and some vines, I don't think you can
that's
sign
possible.
Up for it. Yeah, those are the last two. Ginger and Marianne are the last ones left. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
And every 4 years, we gather in front of our television sets all around the world watching the Winter Olympics and ask the same question.
I just have one question. Is curling a real thing?
Curling is actually a real thing, Bart. Yes, it is. And every 4 years here on the Kevin and Bean Show, we marvel at the fact that it not only still exists, but it's still an Olympic event because it's shuffleboard. Am I right?
Yeah, it's shuffleboard, and you know that a sport is bogus when the biggest thing about it is that they wear wacky clothes.
Those who caught a shuffleboard on ice are ill-advised.
Well, let's find out a little bit about curling from this year, because I tuned in yesterday. By the way, another way you can tell it's among the most popular sports at the Winter Olympics is it's on CNBC at 2 p.m. So that's really when America is tuning in to see their favorite sports, right? Fred Rogan anchors the coverage at the NBC facility, I think in Connecticut, and he gets us going.
Curling was contested at the inaugural Winter Games in 1924. I remember well. I was just a sideline reporter then. But after a 70-plus year absence, curling returned to the Olympic program in 1998. Audiences were mystified.
By the way,
70 years curling was out of the Olympics.
Well, how did they bring it back in 98?
And why? Right? That's so weird.
Then transfixed. They didn't understand what they were seeing, but they couldn't look away. Curling seems like a sport that anybody could do, but it turns out these fiercely competitive athletes possess a highly specialized skill.
Now, are they fiercely competitive athletes?
They are not, sir.
And I started thinking about this. I went down a little bit of a wormhole in my mind yesterday thinking about this. It does look like something almost anybody could do, but you could say that about a lot of sports. You could certainly say that about golf, right? You could
sure,
say that about,
yes.
You know, there are lots of things that people do that they make it look easy because they're tremendously skilled.
By the way, I think there's a difference between a competition, perhaps, and a sport. Like
right.
Golf, I would call a competition.
Like you wouldn't mind a curling championship, even a world championship, but being in the Olympics is what seems like a step too far for us, right?
I guess I have no interest.
And the sport's popularity increases with each games. This is the opening day of curling in Sochi, and for the American men, it's a possible first step back towards Olympic respectability following their last place finish in 2010.
Boo.
The U.S. opened up against Norway. You may have heard about the Norwegians' pants, but their sporting substance to go along with that dubious style.
All right, now we are going to hear much more about the Norwegian team's pants. As Kevin mentioned, that's probably the most famous thing about the sport is they wear crazy pants. They're like checkerboard pants. And for whatever reason, people just they talk about it all the time. It's like the big thing. That's their calling card. Now we go inside the arena, and you'll find out something else that I'm so sad to have just missed on the TV broadcast yesterday. We didn't get to see this. We only joined the broadcast afterwards.
The bagpipers just wrapped up playing.
Curling plus bagpipes?
That's got
He's
everything.
Still my heart.
The cube as we get set to start the third and final session of this opening day of the Round Robin Curling Tournament. And a good look inside the Ice Cube Curling Center, capacity of 3,000, and Russia is playing in this session.
Okay, if you're at the Winter Olympics,
Why is Ice Cube in Sochi making some kind of a...
No, they call it the Ice Cube. That's the venue where they play is the Ice Cube. Yeah, I was looking around for the rapper, too. Boy, would he stand out in that crowd.
Yes, he would.
Anyway, I was thinking, Russia is playing in Russia, and the venue that they're holding the event in only holds 3,000 people, and it wasn't full.
Because
that should be an indication maybe
because it's curling.
That curling maybe is not the sport that people hope it to be. And by the way, I know that there are curling clubs in Southern California, and there are people who love it.
Yeah.
But what's up with you? All right, now let's hear some more about the pants, all right?
And Norway's pants. When you talk Norway and you talk curling, you talk pants. And there are the pants. They have brought 9 different pairs of pants to Sochi, and they're planning to use one for each of their round robin games. Then,
can you imagine any other sport where you have 9 appearances in 9 different uniforms?
No, and it's not the uniform is never the focal point,
right?
You know what I mean? When you talk about the Super Bowl, you talk about the players, the positions, who's good at what, you know, who can cover, who has the best defense. All of that stuff is around the play, not their outfit.
I think changing 9 times does make it a sport. That's very
wrong. It does sound like a lot of effort.
It does.
I guess they're superstitious, like, you know, hockey players with their beards. I guess they just, if they feel they played particularly well, they go, well, let's bring out those pants from Game 4 and we'll wear those in the finals because those are our lucky pants.
Yeah.
But we're not done yet.
If they're lucky enough to move on, they'll figure out which pants were the lucky pants, and they'll use those in the medal rounds. However, you may think about these pants. They've brought a great deal of attention to the sport of curling, and while they could be funny and humorous and goofy at times, it's been a good thing for the sport, John.
It has, and I make a lot
and
of
fun. And then they go on for another like couple of minutes about the pants. All
it's
right,
been a good thing for the sport.
We're almost out of time. Let's get into a little coverage of the actual event. Now, Kevin, describe for folks who maybe have never seen curling what it looks like, and then we'll hear what it sounds like.
It's first of all, it's shuffleboard on ice.
Those who call it shuffleboard on ice are ill-advised.
I don't know. You have what they call a stone. It looks like a puck in hockey that's 20 times as big.
Uh-huh.
And they push it on the ice, and it slides into a target. And then you basically try and knock the other guy's rock out of it. It's absurd. And then the guys in front are sweeping the ice to get it to go faster or slower, and they're yelling at each other. I don't even understand it.
The yelling is the craziest part.
The Norway skip Thomas Olsrud pointing the broom for Nergard, his final stone of the first end.
There you go. You can hear the broom. You can hear the yelling.
Really working this one hard. Now they're off it a bit. Sweeping that rock to hold it straight. To execute that takeout.
All right, so those are the Norwegians. And then we'll close with one more clip from yesterday. And by the way, I'm sad to say that Norway did end up winning against the United States.
I'd like to suggest that I am perfectly fine being in last place in the world in curling. I'm good with that.
Norway won 7-4, but let's hear what one of the U.S. throws sounded like, because they really get into it.
So Jeff Isaacson lays the broom for Schuster in an early test for John Schuster as he tries to freeze this stone.
Come on, John. Here we go.
Finds a little
easy, that, easy, a lot of room.
Finds good.
Yep. This is something that John typically does very well. The soft finesse game.
The soft finesse game. Listen to him.
He's screaming hard.
It's really curling on him. I think he's on
Gotta
the guard.
Get that around the guard. He hits the guard.
Oh, oh no, he hit the guard.
We'll try to sweep that in.
Well, it gets him into the 12-foot red circle.
Doesn't it seem like they should, by now, after 500 years of curling, have a name for the 12-foot red circle? Like at some point. So, go USA, I guess?
Woo. I'm fine with everyone else handling this one. We'll take hockey, thank you.
Got an Oscar-nominated actor on the program today. He is Barkhad Abdi. You know him from Captain Phillips. Probably, I think he's probably best known from Captain Phillips at this point. Wouldn't you say that's fair?
I think that's the only place he's known from.
Also, Petros Papadakis will be joining us talking about sports later on today. And, of course, we'll hook you up with perhaps a trip to Brazil. Get you on the standby boarding list to go see Lollapalooza down there. Details at Carrick.com.
All right, what's going on with the creationism versus evolution? There was a big debate. I wasn't following that.
Yes, Bill Nye debated a guy who's a Bible scholar, someone who believes that God put everything on the earth, and that's his science. That's all the science he needs. And Bill Nye said, you know, there's a lot of evidence to the contrary. So this is a debate that is never going to be won, because there are people who insist on taking the Bible, which is a book of fairy tales, and assigning science to it, and basically saying that's the gospel truth, no pun intended. And that brings us to a story that's going around again, and I've seen this before, about the Creationist Museum in Kentucky. Hard to believe it would be in Kentucky, but it looks like a dinosaur museum. And what happens is you go through and you find out that all of their science is based on the Bible. For instance, they believe that people and dinosaurs not only were created on the same day, and there's some interpretation involved in how long a day was in God's making of the earth, but that they existed at the same time.
Right.
And they have all sorts of displays of humans peacefully coexisting with dinosaurs. And we know from science that that just didn't happen, that the dinosaurs were gone for millions of years before the people ever appeared. It's science, people. Yet this museum is teaching people that go through it that the Bible knows what's up.
Being Lloyd Carruthers has been listening to you. He's the associate curator of the Creation Museum.
Oh, okay.
He's on the phone with us right now, Mr. Yeah. Carruthers. I didn't know you were there. How are you, sir?
Good morning. How y'all doing today?
We are good.
What's going on with your crazy dinosaur museum today?
Well, first of all, I would take umbrage with the phrase crazy.
Okay.
The Creation Museum is simply a natural history museum, perhaps the finest in all Kentucky. And we simply tell the truth about the prehistoric animals and dinosaurs without any of the secular propaganda that is so prolific in our school systems.
But is religious propaganda healthier than secular propaganda?
Well, I would say truth is healthier than secular propaganda, if that's what you're trying to do.
Dinosaurs and humans were never on the earth at the same time.
Well, you can say that all you like, but the Bible would tell you otherwise.
Right, but the Bible isn't science.
Oh, I see. And you, sir, are, let me see, either a biblical scholar or a scientist yourself.
I'm neither of those,
oh,
but
then I'd suggest, sir, that you shut your mouth.
Right, where does it say, tell us where it says in the Bible that they were on the earth at the same time?
Well, if you read Genesis, my ill-informed friend,
okay,
you'll find that the God created the beasts of the planet, including man and dinosaur, on the sixth day.
Okay. Now, Is that it?
Boom, that just happened.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned before we got you on the line, sir, there's a lot of interpretation as to how long a day is in God's eyes. It's not 24 hours as we know it today.
Oh, I see. Now you're a clock. Now you know all things time.
But how do you know that the beast, the word beast, means dinosaur?
Well, what would you classify a dinosaur as, sir? A chair? A table?
No, that's absurd.
Some wallpaper?
I would describe it as an animal.
A tall stack of CDs?
But I would describe
it... A red solo cup?
No, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you, sir? I would suggest that dinosaurs are in fact beasts and did live peacefully alongside Adam and Eve, of course, until they did the most heinous thing and created original sin. And at that point, that's when carnivorous animals became a fact. But as we know, it is a fact that Noah put all of the animals, two by two, into his ark, including two of each dinosaur. And so they survived the Great Flood and lived alongside man very peacefully.
Now, when I was a little kid, I was taught that dinosaurs became extinct after the flood because they didn't make it onto the ark. But you're telling me that's not true either.
I'm so sorry for you. No, it is a fact. They have existed alongside man, and then they died out, probably from hunger or from, I don't know, they caught a cold. Or perhaps a big rock fell on them.
All of them?
Or perhaps the modern Stone Age family stopped using them for transportation and to get quarry out of the rock with Mr. Slate.
Okay, you're thinking of the Flintstones now. That, you know, that's not true either, right, Lloyd?
Oh, now you're the expert on what's true and what's not. Now you're the truth keeper.
The Flintstones are a cartoon. They're not real.
Let me tell you something, my friend. I know what is real, and the Bible is real. And let me tell you something. Do you ever get a weather report in the morning to see what the weather's going to be like outside?
Sure, of course.
Okay, and that weather report tells you the temperature and when it's going to rain or not.
Right.
Cloudy or sunny. Now, when you read that report, do you say, I don't believe that. No, I'm going to go out with my own barometer and my own thermometer, and I'm going to get my own facts, and I will do all the science. Do you do that every day?
I don't. No.
No, so you do not. And that's what the Bible is. The Bible is all the facts there just for us to read. We don't have to do any of that messy science. It's right there for us in black and white.
What do you do with the science that contradicts what you believe?
Well, there is none.
Okay.
First of all, because science is right there in the Bible. He tells us, God tells us what is and what is not. Word to your mama.
And on that note, you win. Thanks a lot for tuning in today. We really do appreciate it. You know, there are lots of different ways you can contact the show. Of course, the Kevin and Bean Facebook page is maybe a good way, particularly during the show. Seems like a lot of people have comments. They end up talking about various subjects that they're hearing on the Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at Kevin and Bean and tweet us there. You can always drop us an email if you want. It's whoever you're trying to reach at krock.com. There's the Kevin and Bean Afro line. Lots of ways for you to be in touch. We are taking a look at email right now. We got a lot of emails on a lot of the topics that have been on the show lately, including the one about being detained at the airport. Seems like a lot of our listeners have been in trouble with the TSA, Kevin.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Listen to this one. Tell me what kind of a dumbass lugar is. Dear Kevin and Bean, I'm an avid podcast listener from New York City. I have something to add to your detained at the airport stories. I am originally from Orange County, and the last week of April last year, I visited my family in Irvine. I left my girlfriend behind in New York. She's also from Southern California, and she had been complaining about how much she missed the California beach. So to be nice, I put some sand from the beach in a water bottle to bring back to her as a souvenir. In a completely separate matter, my mom had an extra rice cooker at home, so I decided to bring that back too. Because I was flying the red eye, I carried on my luggage. And to save space, I mindlessly stuffed the rice cooker with the small items like my socks and whatnot, including the bottle of California sand. Can you guys see where this is going, by the way?
Yeah.
Long story short, I was stopped by LAX security during the security check because this was only 2 weeks after the Boston Marathon bombing where the bombers used pressure cookers as bombs. Security put me in a room and asked me all these questions about why I had a rice cooker and what the substance was in the bottle. I explained as seriously as I could, but at one point I started laughing because I realized how dumb I was for carrying a rice cooker with sand, especially right after the bombing.
Yeah.
Eventually, I was able to be let go, and they let me keep the rice cooker and the bottle of sand to take back to my girlfriend, so no good deed goes unpunished. Oh, yeah, fire beer mug, best lugar.
We've been talking a lot about the Beatles this week, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Or last week, I guess, was the main week. But and Sunday night was the show, and I'm not a fan of the Beatles. I understand they're great, and I understand a lot of the artists that I like love them.
But you would never listen to them if you came across them on the radio. There's no Beatles song that you like enough that you would listen to.
No. This came in the Kevin and Bean Facebook page. Kevin, you are not alone in your stance on the Beatles. I hate the band.
Whoa.
They are the NSYNC Backstreet Boys of the 50s and 60s.
Well, they don't even give him their place in history, really.
I'd like to just suggest that I don't want this guy on my side. Because I'm not going that far. I'm just saying, personally, I don't listen to him. You have to give them their place in history. Mm-hmm. Can't really change that.
It is funny, though, because part of the coverage of the 50th anniversary of the Beatle invasion that we've been seeing this week is reviews at the time from old people who really did look at them as just a teen boy band.
Right.
And they hated them so much. But I thought at this point everybody's kind of grown out of that, but I guess not.
He ends it, the Beatles below. I was like, all right, I don't want you on my side, I don't think.
Here's one from Matt. A few days ago, we were talking about if you've ever tried to set a world record. Dear Kevin and Bean, I'm trying to set the world record for the longest consecutive amount of time listening to the Kevin and Bean show. Right now, I'm up to 18 seconds. Wish me luck. That says Matt. He's never been able to get past that. Here's one. And by the way, Kevin, I've received a lot of support from people like me who don't like packing peanuts, who are paralyzed by boxes with packing peanuts.
Oh, you're all idiots.
About two or three times a week, somebody will send me a picture of a box that's arrived at their house or office just filled with packing peanuts, and they don't know what to do because how do you get the gift out or whatever's being sent to you out without packing peanuts all over the house?
Could I just suggest again that you just take it out and clean them up?
Yeah.
Kristen says, Dear Kevin and Bean, I recently heard you discuss about not wanting to open the gift from Kevin because you didn't want to get packing peanuts all over the place. I silently laughed out loud to myself. Actually, she didn't say silently and out loud.
Okay.
I read that wrong. About this, as I emptied some into a trash bin today at work, I didn't notice that one was on the floor and my heel caught on it, and I promptly fell and broke my tailbone.
Oh, please.
Thankfully, I work with a bunch of men, and I have a pretty great butt, so everyone was eager to help. I not only almost made it onto Bean's death quarter, but it would have been a great vindication for you if I had been killed by packing peanuts. Kristen, well, I'm glad you survived that. That sounds like a very harrowing experience, so well done.
It may be time to do a phone-in topic again of ridiculous things you're scared of.
That's true.
Let me read one more. I know you've got a big closer for us, but this is on the topic of things that you prayed for. Remember when we had listeners calling in and telling stories about how they prayed for things to happen, and then they did. Tell me if you guys think this is true, because it sounds like it is. It's from Ryan. I had a teacher named Mr. Ruff back in high school that was telling the story that when he was in middle school, there was a teacher that he hated and used to pray that she would die. That teacher would later go on to get into a program with NASA that took a teacher into space on the space shuttle. That teacher won the program and was on the Challenger explosion in 1986. It still haunts Mr. Ruff to this day. You think that's true?
Boy, there's no way to know.
No.
Boy, I sure hope not. But can you imagine what that would be like if that really was the teacher that you hated in high school and then they ended up blowing up on the space shuttle? Oh, my God. What a sad, terrifying story that is.
We were talking yesterday about the opening ceremonies of the Olympics and how the Russian police choir was singing Get Lucky. And I was really looking throughout the entire opening ceremony for that. And then I started thinking, well, I wonder if this is a fake. And then we did some research and said, well, some listeners did some research and sent us the information. Hey, gentlemen, I believe that the video shows Russia's famous Red Army Chorus. Although it is labeled the Russian police, I think it was the Red Army Chorus. This one comes to me from Tammy. They performed Get Lucky on the Today Show this morning. By the way, on a side note, I believe they were performing Get Lucky on the Today Show while I was calling BS on them.
as not existing and not being real.
Yes. It was said they performed just before the opening ceremonies.
And that's why NBC didn't show it.
And then finally, guys, the Russian military police are wacky. The Today Show website says the performance was pre-show before the opening ceremony when they actually did perform Get Lucky by Daft Punk. We got to fight. I cannot for the life of me put two and two together, though, on how that exists in the Russian military. Then.
Bizarre. Yeah, you wouldn't think that they would allow that kind of levity.
Check out this video of the Russian Military Academy Ensemble performing Tom Jones's Sex Bomb.
No.
Apparently, this is their thing. They just do wacky covers of songs that you would never expect.
Sex bomb, you my sex bomb. You can give it to me when I need to come along. Sex bomb, you my sex bomb. And baby, you can carry me on.
That is a thing. I am proud to tell you people that exists, and I love it so much.
That's awesome.
And that's the military chorus right there. You can find all of that stuff. We put it up at the Kevin and Bean Twitter feed, at Kevin and Bean. It's the world-famous K-Rock at 6:52.
The bizarre story of the woman in the news for breastfeeding her dog.
Yeah.
That's coming up right after the top of the hour. First, though, Rob is here with the Showbiz Beat Out of Tuesday. What's going on?
Good times. Crazy pet parents.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's Tuesday, Peaceful. What? It's Tuesday, people. Not Peaceful. That means new release day. CDs. Here's what you can pick up. The Lego Movie original soundtrack's available. For those of you who can't get enough Lego.
That was quick.
Now you can get all your Lego music. Acoustic at the Ryman by Band of Horses. And Love, Death, Immortality by the Glitch Mob. We should start calling ourselves the Glitch Mob.
I think the name's taken, though.
Well, we should.
We're already the Chuckleheads, Ralph.
We got to take it back.
Take it back? We never had it, but all right.
I'm tired of it being an insult. I want to take the Glitch Mob back.
Okay.
Who has more glitches than we do?
That's true.
No one.
That is true.
DVDs. Here's what's new. Ender's Game. Harrison Ford and Asa Butterfield. Haley Steinfeld. The Best Man. Morris Chestnut. Melissa D'Souza and Monica Calhoun star. Best Man Holiday, I should say. Best Man was already a film. This is the next film in the fantastic franchise of the Best Man movies.
And this Morris Chestnut, he's the guy from the Super Bowl commercial Sam Rubin was talking about,
no,
right?
No, that was Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, sorry. Confused.
Morris Chestnut had that band, The Time, remember? And they
nope,
did
that's
that Jungle
Morris Day.
Love.
That's a completely different person.
We're going to have to
Kevin
agree to
came up with that, by the way.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. F you.
Oh, no, you're
impressed.
Right. Our bad, because you always are really good at that game and play all the time.
Thank you, Rob.
Austin Land with Kerry Russell. This will sell one copy to Lisa. I'm guessing that's it.
Well, I like DVD. Her, but I've never heard of it.
You never heard of Austin Land?
Me either.
It's where all this, it's a comedy about the women who go to that Jane Austen theme park.
I will watch
look
it.
Look at how happy.
I forgot.
Wow.
That's right.
She, it was like you gave her a dildo made out of chocolate. Lisa couldn't have been happier.
Hey.
wow.
Counselor, starring Michael Fassbender and Penelope Cruz and Brad Pitt. What? This was a movie? This existed with those people and it's the first time hearing of it?
That wasn't the one with Cameron Diaz having
counselor.
Sex with the car?
No. The Counselor. This was brought to you from the man who wrote No Country for Old Men, I think directed
Right. And this was supposed to be terrible, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to be awful. Diana, the story of Princess Diana with Naomi Watts is available on DVD today. Killing Kennedy with Rob Lowe as the president. All right.
I saw that.
And? Was it good?
On purpose?
Yeah, it was okay.
Were you on a plane?
It was based on the Bill O'Reilly book.
I know it was based on. Why would you watch it?
You know, I'm...
Not
I'm
enough info out there about that
I'm a fan
incident.
Of presidential stuff. It was around the 50th anniversary of the assassination. There was a lot of cool stuff on, and it was just one of the things I taped. I
forgot.
I enjoyed it.
It involved death. How could Bean not jump all
and
over
And presidents.
It?
You know, I love presidents.
The words, you know how I love presidents. Who says that?
I'm fascinated with that office and the men who hold it. That's all. Like a lot of people are. Look, there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of books and TV shows and movies centered around presidents. I mean, it's a fascinating job.
Just want to see how long you'd go.
he can keep going.
Chunk not... was. How I Live Now. With Saoirse Ronan. That's the post-apocalyptic teenage love story. The Armstrong Lie, the documentary about Lance Armstrong. What a dick he was. And Pussy Riot, A Punk Prayer. Documentary about the legendary Russian band who I think got rid of a couple of their members, didn't they?
Did they? I don't know.
Yeah.
I know they were on Stephen Colbert and his first question was, have you been to an Olive Garden yet? I don't know why, he came up with it.
Because he asks the probing, important question.
Have you heard their actual music, Ralph?
I have.
Okay.
I am not a fan.
I'd like to play a clip, and I know we always play clips that sound terrible, and they're not the actual... This is Pussy Riot.
All right.
And this is really not good.
Oh, my God, that last one. Yeah, now I'm in.
Holy cow.
Somewhere I bet Yoko Ono is going, what? You're making fun of me?
That's right.
Tragic news today. We lost a legend. I'm sure Kevin hated her, too. Shirley Temple passed away yesterday at the age of 85.
Just no interest.
If Kevin hates the Beatles, I'm sure he despised poor little Shirley Temple Black, the adorable little child star who got this country through the Great Depression.
Why are you yelling at me?
Because you're horrible.
But I don't have any...
You hated her and she was a sweetheart.
I have no interest in that story whatsoever.
Have you ever seen a Shirley Temple film?
No.
Don't say no.
Like I said, what's the answer?
Oh, no. It's got the black plague crawling all over it. She was a remarkable entertainer.
Fantastic. Good. I'm not against her.
But you're not for her. The reason you're not for her is because you've never seen her.
Okay.
It was insane how polished and professional and charming and talented she was at the age of 5 when she was America's biggest movie star at the age of 5.
Why are you yelling at me?
Because it's a phenomenon that has never been repeated before or since.
But I didn't come on and say I hate her or she's bad.
It's a remarkable miracle of modern cinema. Her entire career was a phenomenon.
Okay. Congratulations. I'm happy.
She's dead. Congratulate her now. She's dead. And I hope you're happy.
No, he is. He's very happy she's dead. She was the biggest child star of all time ever,
biggest
right?
Biggest child star? Why don't you hold on there, pal? Biggest movie star in America.
I know that. But what I'm saying is, with all the 80 years that have come since then, and all the other child stars that have been
there
in front of us,
no one like her before.
No one was
or
bigger
since.
Than Shirley Temple.
Why? No one.
Why are you yelling about her? Who cares?
A lot of people care.
I'm conceding your point.
You're not.
I am. You win.
Kevin probably killed her.
Little princess.
I think you should give that a rest, Ralph.
We lost her. Gone.
And then she went on to be a U.N. ambassador for decades and worked for the U.N. I mean, she had a whole full
Wait a minute. She was a U.N.
career.
Ambassador and she worked for the U.N.?
Yes.
How could she manage both of those things?
She worked for the U.N. for many, many years, and then she became an ambassador to countries like Czechoslovakia separately from
and
her work.
Ghana.
And Ghana.
And
Ghana as well.
What is happening on this radio show?
She's popular and smart and good.
She was presented with the SAG Lifetime Achievement Award in 2006. She said, "When I was 3 years old, I was delighted to be told I was an actress, even when I didn't know what an actress was. I have one piece of advice for those of you who want to receive the Lifetime Achievement Award.
Wear sunscreen.
Start early."
No.
She was a movie star at 3. What did you do when you were 3, Kevin? Oh, that's right. You just crapped your pants and sat around in it and probably wrote on the walls with it, I'm guessing, like a monkey.
That was till age 5, actually.
There endeth the lesson.
All right.
Shirley Temple Black. She will be missed. Today's celebrity birthdays. Actress Tina Louise from Gilligan's Island is 80 years old today. Actor Burt Reynolds, 78. He is a rough 78. That is not a good 78.
I think he was 78 when I was born.
No.
He's always seemed old
Come
to
on.
Me.
He even has always. You, no, even you lived in a time where you could not have been blind to the phenomenon that was Smokey and the Bandit and Semi-Tough when he was at the peak of his powers, when he was the biggest movie star in America, you were like watching movies then.
Should we just fight?
He couldn't have been.
Just get it out of your system.
You thought Burt Reynolds was always old when you were around watching movies when like Smokey and the Bandit and Cannonball Run, and these were giant films in your time.
You might win the fight, but I'm going to throw.
I'm saying you're wrong.
Okay. You guys have got to be on the undercard of that Zimmerman DMX fight.
That got canceled. Kevin Iron just got moved up to the main event.
All right.
Show Crow's 52. She always seemed old to me. Jennifer Aniston's 45. She seemed old on that Friends show. Wasn't she old then? Damian Lewis from Homeland, 43 years old today. Kelly Slater's 42. Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park and Fort Minor is 37. Brandy's 35. Matthew Lawrence is 34. Kelly Rowland of Destiny's Child's 33. Aubrey O'Day of Danity Kane fame is 30. And actor Taylor Lautner celebrates his 22nd birthday.
I'm going to come and get you. You better look out because I'm really upset now.
He's the singing dog from Twilight, right?
That's right. He's the singing dog from Twilight. And I believe he co-starred with Shirley Temple.
I don't think that.
No, that's right.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Well, those 6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 9 minutes after 7.
And I apologize. It was a slow song.
Right.
But it was a good one.
It was good.
You don't hear too many good slow songs.
Well, really?
That was a pretty good one.
A lot of slow songs that are good, Rodney, but thank you for that.
And that wasn't that slow either. Really?
Petroth Papadakis joins us in studio in about 10 minutes or so here on the Kevin and Bean Show to talk about all sorts of things, including why Kevin hates Shirley Temple.
I don't!
First, though, did you guys see the crazy story about the woman who posted the photo of her breast on Facebook?
No.
And she was feeding a puppy?
I missed
she
that.
She was breastfeeding a puppy?
Yes, she was breastfeeding a puppy.
I did not see that.
It's a bizarre story. Lisa, can you imagine any circumstances under which, and I know this is quite a stretch because you have to be also giving milk at the time, but can you imagine any circumstances under which you would breastfeed a puppy?
Are there still bottles that I could feed the puppy from?
Yes, there are.
Then no.
It does seem like maybe there's some other options. Let's find out what's going on with this lady.
It's a photo of a puppy feeding on a mother's milk, not his mother or even his species. Believe it or not, until she did it, the woman who was breastfeeding the puppy felt the same way you probably are.
Just did it, you know, but I never thought I would ever do that. That's just something, it was taboo to me as well. I guess you could call it, in a sense, like a maternal instinct.
All right, so she's grossed out by the whole thing. It's not something she planned on doing. She doesn't get off on it. It's not her thing. Let's find out what happened.
The foster mom is in silhouette because she's afraid of the backlash because of that maternal instinct.
Okay, now here's the biggest question I have. Why are you laughing, Kevin?
Because she has to go into hiding.
Yeah, she's in hiding. They're not giving her name, her city. She's in silhouette on the TV because of the backlash that she's getting from posting the photo of breastfeeding a puppy that she posted.
Right.
What? Yeah.
This is the biggest mystery of the whole story. I don't even care why she's breastfeeding a dog at this point. I want to know why she put it up online and then has to go into hiding because of the threats that she's getting. It could have been a secret.
Yes.
Nobody ever had to know that she did this, right?
That's A, but B, I don't know why somebody would threaten her afterwards. You know, like, you see the picture, you go, that woman's crazy, and then you move on with your day.
That's what I would think so too. Yes, exactly. But apparently she's now in the witness relocation program.
It was the run of the litter, just days old, a lab mix whose mother was killed. It wouldn't eat from the bottle. It wouldn't eat formula.
All right, so Lisa, now we've taken away your backup plan, which is bottle and formula. Now what do you do? There's nothing left.
He just wasn't taking it. I didn't know what else to do. I was desperate, and I just couldn't bear sitting there watching him die. And literally just what clicked in my head was just like, just put him on you and just pray to God that maybe he'll take something and not die.
Not only didn't die, he's no longer the run of the litter. And his name is Tubbs.
It really reaffirmed what I did was right, because I was, for myself, quietly in my mind, embarrassed. I was ashamed. It felt weird. It was weird.
Now, I sort of am kind of around on this lady now, because, I mean, she sounds like a reasonable, thoughtful person who really just was in extraordinary circumstances and realized she didn't have any other options, is what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, last-ditch effort. But, and I have to say, I wouldn't probably let the dog die.
Right?
But wait a minute. How does that even come to your mind? How do you go, I'm going to breastfeed the puppy? How does that?
I think
it's
because,
not like, yes,
if she is generating milk, she's already breastfeeding an infant.
Right.
So maybe it's kind of an easy go-to, as she said, well, I've given this one over here some milk. Maybe it'll help for this one over here. I just don't understand why she didn't take the dog immediately to the vet. And
right.
Couldn't they put it on an IV or something? Isn't that the way
or
you can get
you,
some
like
nutrition?
Droppers, like an eyedropper down their throat kind
know.
Of thing? I don't know.
So it would take a lot to get to the booby, is what you're saying, Lisa.
Yeah,
it would, but you could get to the booby.
You could also put it in a bowl, by the way, just for the record.
But
it wasn't taking anything.
So you think it was what it was.
Huh. Yeah, the dog wasn't taking it as, you know, from a bottle or formula or anything like that. Remember, it's a tiny little puppy. I mean, it's a newborn, essentially. So it's not probably can't even drink out of a bowl.
You know how sharp those teeth are?
Now,
I don't think it has them yet.
Woo! I was surprised to hear of the potential danger to the boy, the little boy that this woman is also breastfeeding as a result of sharing a boob with a dog. Would you have expected that part of the story?
No. Does he bark? Veterinarian Dr. Amber Williams says she's less concerned about the taboo.
I'm more concerned about zoonotic disease because there are things that can be passed from, you know, puppies to babies.
Now, aren't there lots of people who basically mouth kiss their dogs? Their dogs jump up on them and they kiss, you know, they lick their lips and stuff like that all the time?
Sure.
Have you ever heard of anything being transferred from a dog to a person as a result of that?
No, but I think this involves the internal parts of a woman as well. I don't know.
I don't know either.
I've never heard
of it. I was surprised.
Nutritionally, Dr. Williams says human breast milk also isn't the best for puppies.
Oh. In an emergency situation, I don't think it's a big deal. But for them to grow appropriately, I think it would be important for them to get on a canine formula.
The foster mom's 15-month-old baby is weaned off her breast milk, and so is Tubbs. He's now wolfing down formula straight out of the bottle.
I've seen the results. That dog is alive because I took that initiative.
So, happy ending.
Yay.
That's weird.
It is a bizarre story.
I don't
this
like
it. This is so gross. I'm so grossed out by this. I'm going to take a picture of it and put it up on Facebook. The P has joined us in studio here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Ladies and gentlemen, Petros Papadakis from the Petros and Money Radio Show. Weekday afternoons on AM 570. Hi, P. How you doing, buddy?
Where's Ralph?
I don't know.
He's in the other room. Ralph? Where's the intro? Where's the butt buddy thing?
We're
the bachelor.
We're talking sports first. Sports.
Yeah, we're talking sports. Well, sorry, you have to wait
prepped.
For...
I wasn't prepped, so I don't know
you're
sports that well.
You're always prepped for sports, though.
It makes us so sad that we do not have a sports guy on the Kevin and Bean Show. You know,
I'm
Matt
your
Money
sports
Smith,
guy, so is Matt.
Matt used to be our sports guy here, and Jimmy Kimmel, sports guy before him.
Yeah,
and
but there was
others.
A guy after Matt. Who was that guy?
No one.
No, there was a guy. He was here. I remember him. I met him once.
We used to love having a sports guy. My point is every day it seems like there's something fascinating going on in the world of sports, and we don't get a chance to talk to anybody about it. So that's why we're so happy when you come in and we can just unload on you.
All right. Well, blow it out.
All right. Let's start with Michael Sam, who's the most famous football player in the world right now that only college football geeks knew about until about 2 days ago. Talk about that.
Yeah, well, we cover college football nationally on the Petros and Money Show. And also, well, it's my job on Fox. And
sure.
It has been for a long time. So I was aware of Michael Sam. He was a swivel-hipped defensive end, a very good one, who is a pass rusher in the SEC. SEC Defensive Player of the Year, the SEC, one of the most, if not the most, reputable conferences in the history of football. The modern age that they've had has been spectacular.
And Missouri won the Cotton Bowl this year, right?
Missouri had a great year, kind of a undercover year. Nobody expected them to be great, and this was a kid who was a leader of that team, the most recognizable name on their defense, and turns out he was gay.
And his players, his teammates knew about that all year long.
Which is amazing. You know, for me, it's a trip.
And they loved him, and they were a team, and they played together, and they won together. And now, all of a sudden, there are all these people who are rearing their ugly, bigoted heads and saying, well, the NFL, that's not going to fly in the NFL. People aren't going to want to draft. No one's going to want to play with that guy. Where's all that talk coming from?
I have not heard much of that talk. No,
Even in the Peter King SI story, he talked to unnamed NFL sources.
It might hurt his draft status, but here's the deal with that. And this is a many layered thing, and I don't want to be too serious on this wacky show. But this is a many layered issue, and it's something that's happening in the world of football that I did not see coming. You know,
ever.
Not ever, but times in society has changed, there's no doubt. When I played football, when I was in high school, there was no openly gay people at my high school. And I got to college and we saw openly gay people. It wasn't something that I hope that I would react in a good, mature way as the captain of the USC football team and that my teammates would too, but that was a different time. You know, these guys now have grown up with Will and Grace
and
shows like that.
You sensed that maybe it wouldn't have gone so well.
Very much so.
Okay.
And there's still going to be people that are not, because there's a lot of religious piety in American sports, especially the high levels of football. So you have that.
Wait, there's religious piety in football?
Yes.
Wow.
Like, you know, when a guy scores a touchdown and goes, Jesus, you know, and all that stuff. You know, I mean, you have a lot of guys that because of their religion are very anti-homosexual or gay. So we're going to see how that all plays out. But here's the overriding point of the whole thing. This was not done by accident. Everybody knew this guy was gay. His team knew it already.
Right.
Everybody handled it, like Bean said, in Missouri. excellently. I mean, they could not come out of this looking better. This is a young man who's ready to go. He's ready to play. Is he a top draft pick? No. But is he NFL caliber? Should he be? Will he be on a roster? Yes, he will be. The NFL took a lot of PR hits last year. Right. The incognito thing with the bullying, the Chris Cluey, the punter, saying that the homosexually bigoted guy who's the special teams coach for the Vikings, all these different things, not to mention all the concussion stuff. The NFL is right on top of this. They are going to make sure this goes smoothly. They cannot afford another PR
hit.
Does
he have a better chance of making the NFL now?
The reason he might have it, and being referred the Peter King article, the reason he might have more trouble getting drafted higher.
Oh, I see.
And I think Goodell will get involved in that no matter what. And I don't know the level of how those people operate. That's way above my head. But I'm sure that there is a lot of collaboration going on. But people don't. It's like having Tim Tebow on your team at this point.
Right.
You invite crossover media environment into your football camp that is a distraction to a football team.
And so if you can draft Michael Sam and then have to deal with 100 media outlets coming at your practice every day talking about it and interviewing all your players and being a distraction, or you can get another guy who's just as good who doesn't have all of that, what do you do? That's the question, right?
Well, I mean, look, somebody was going to – the owner at the Philadelphia Eagles made a statement, a progressive public statement, and he took Michael Vick when everybody said this guy can't be trusted, he's a bad guy. Jeffrey Lurie, the owner of the Eagles, said, no, we can – all it takes is one owner. And Goodell knows where to place this guy. They're all – I would love to say that this is happening in a vacuum and it's some wonderful societal change. The NFL is fostering this because this guy happens to be gay and he is an NFL-caliber player and he is open. This is not the first gay guy to play in the NFL. I'm sure that there's plenty of gay guys.
Is it the first guy that came out
before? This is the first openly gay guy who's going to play in the NFL. Unless some barring some injury, one has a guy Esra Tualo, who was an Oregon State guy who played for the Vikings briefly. He came out after his career, but this is totally different.
Yeah.
But there's been guys that have been gay that played football for a long time, and just no one ever knew.
Right.
It was funny this story though, how he said everyone knew. Like he said,
dated a swimmer. You know, the athletic department is like a radio station. You know, everybody be knowing everything at a university. And I've been to Columbia, Missouri. I did a game there. I did one of Michael Sam's game a couple of years ago. I mean, there's nothing there. There's a water tower and there's a football stadium.
That's it. So everybody knows everything.
Everybody knows. He was dating a male swimmer. And everybody knew about it. And
There's gay male swimmers?
Apparently. the way the team handled this, I think, is such a promising thing for all of us in the world of football. Because the football I grew up in, and especially the football my father grew up in, it's hard to see this kind of tolerance. And, you know, it's interesting because football has always been to me. I mean, I learned so much about other people as a player. From different cultures, different guys from different parts of the country, different socioeconomic situations.
Right.
And you really do come together in a brotherly type of way. This is a continuance of that, I think. And I think it's a good thing that's happening. Will there be stumbling blocks? Yes. Will the NFL get on top of it because they can't afford for it to go badly? I think that's the case.
Well, this is going to be the most gay-friendly appearance of the P on the Kevin DeBean Show ever, because we're going right from talking about Michael Sam into the report on last night's El Bachelor on ABC.
You're not going to talk about Costas's pink eye?
Oh my God. He's got both eyes.
Yeah, Dave from the King of Mexico told me, could you imagine the moment that Costas realized that little self-important gnome while he was looking in some blurry mirror in Russia that the pink eye was going to the other eye. Can you imagine that scream? It'd be worse than Rocky calling out Drago on top of that mountain.
Pete, you see they pulled him for tonight?
Oh, did they pull his ass?
Yep, Matt Lauer is going to be doing the desk tonight.
Bring in the righty. That's what you get, Costas, for acting so pompous all these years.
Now, Pete, I know that you got
dirty
a lot invested.
Bastard.
If you're NBC, you've got a lot invested in Bob Costas. He's great at his job, and he's the face of the NBC Olympics. But
solution.
That face, though, what call do you make? Do you put him on TV with that pink eye? Did they make a mistake?
I'm telling you what to do. Tell you what to do right now.
Double eye patch.
First, there's one. Okay. You're not far off.
All right.
Or you could just, I mean, Stuart Scott's had two droopy eyes for years. Nobody cares. But anyway, you get a ping pong ball. You put a dot on either side like Calvin and Hobbes.
Right.
You cut it in half. You glue it there.
I like
Costas it. Costas don't need to see. You don't need
I like
use
it.
No prompter. He's a professional.
Here's what I don't understand. Why don't they just take longer shots with the cameras? They keep getting close on him. You go, ugh.
I know.
Why don't they just back up a little?
They're in Sochi. Look. How do you cover this? I had to listen to Apollo Ono, some anthropomorphic-looking speed skater, talk about why an Olympic ring didn't open. Why is he some kind of pyrotechnics expert or something? Shut up, Apollo. I don't care why the ring opened or not. And let me tell you something else.
Yes.
Look, I'm Greek, okay?
I just want you to know right now you're cutting into the bachelor time, which is fine with me.
Just saying.
You're Greek.
I'm a Greek-American. Uh-huh. And I know that Greece is a mess.
Yes.
Russia makes us look like the Emerald City on the hill. And okay. I am so grateful for those stone-jawed troglodytes of the Eastern Bloc and how they could F up a rock fight with this Olympic.
I don't know what's happening right now, but I do know we'll take a break. He is here for the Petrus and Money Show at AM 570 weekday afternoons. We'll come back and talk El Bachelor. Right?
All right. Give me the big Bachelor intro, please.
Where's Ralph?
Here's Ralph Garman.
Donde está mi hermano?
Butt buddy. Petros Papadakis. This is The Bachelor Report.
Órale, güey.
El Bachelor.
¿Qué onda?
You guys are still pretending that you're watching this show and enjoying it, right? That's still the gig?
Last night was spectacular.
I take notes, dude.
Last night they had a sheep poop fight. It was awesome.
What?
Yeah, you had to hang on for the end. That was like Ferris Bueller. You had to hang on all the way to the credits to see Juan Pablo
Chris
throw.
Chris Harrison said, "What? You're still watching? What are you doing
I mean,
here?
It was only a matter
of time.
They went
to the poop fight.
It was only a matter of time till Juan Pablo started screaming like a monkey and throwing his own feces.
Like a monkey!
Now, what happened? What do you catch us up?
They went to New Zealand.
I don't watch the show. They were in
New
Zealand.
You're devastated.
Yeah, because
he don't know no better.
My pick, Kat, who I loved. Kat was easygoing and funny and adorable and a great dancer. He cut her loose.
A great dancer.
He said great a great dancer. Dancer, didn't he?
You know I like Fernando. He's a fun guy and he's nice. Listen, V-neck. You can't.
He's freaking Juan Pablo just making out with all the ladies. Didn't give my girl Kat a chance and she had to go home. And
look, no, but he never even made out with Kat.
That's why.
But Kat was overtly sexual.
But all he does is keep the girls he makes out with.
Look, she
and
told
the ones he bones in the Puerto Rican Sea.
Here's why Kat went home.
Okay.
Right before Juan Pablo don't want to deal with no emotions, okay? He don't want to get deep.
Right.
He wants to be about as deep as the Vietnamese Ocean, which means he needs to be able to stand up and hunker down so he can plow. All right? So Juan Pablo does not want to get into no conversation about it. He don't want to hear about your life.
Yeah.
And this girl's trying to be like, oh, my dad wasn't there for me.
He was a drunk.
My sister was crying in the crib, and he was laid out drunk on the bed, pile of Zima.
I couldn't wake him up.
By the way, nobody wants to hear that at the beginning of a relationship that's not even a relationship yet.
Right? Well, listen, if you're going to get married, Kevin, at the end of the show.
At some point. No one's getting married. Be honest.
Hey, wait.
How about Sean and Catherine, who just got married a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, on TV with
on
a live
TV.
Honeymoon suite camera. And
like
what about the
monkey?
What about the kids? Between
mean?
The Ryan and the other horrible succubus,
Krista.
They live in Colorado. God, was she awful!
But anyway, so
Peter, are you following any of this?
It's an accelerated,
right.
It's an
on,
accelerating
Bean,
courtship process.
Okay,
so you have very little time to spend with the bachelor.
Got to make the most of it, man.
You have to try to share what you can
and
about
what
yourself.
Juan Pablo does is explore the inside of these women's mouths with his forked lizard Venezuelan tongue.
Hey,
he has explored. He knows every nook, cranny, scar from biting of the cheeks. I mean, he feels the inside.
Is he
of these
any
women's
better
mouths.
At kissing now? Remember how awkward he was at the beginning of the season?
Oh,
he's
like
watching a guppy.
The old makeout king.
You're watching this?
He makes out so hard.
No, I saw the clip of the soup or something of him going in and just the lips going everywhere.
You know how you know these chicks are just sexually like flowers opening up to Juan Pablo as you see their mouths open and their tongues like lizards.
This opera singer Charlene, she's like, I don't know about this. This process really isn't for me. It doesn't feel organic. It doesn't feel organic. And I think I have to leave. And then she'll get with Juan Pablo and then they start making out and she forgets all about how non-organic this process is.
And
when
then,
she's
and then she goes,
undeep.
And then she went, no, we should talk. Okay, let's talk for a second. I'm talking.
And he went right back in.
She can't help herself. Her loins are on fire and fuego for Juan Pablo.
So there's eight women left,
no,
if I'm doing the math
six,
correct.
Six. guests.
Oh, right, fantastic.
Six. Half a dozen, brother.
There's six left. And they edit the show in a way that there is no such thing as a favorite because they want to keep you guessing till the end who's going to pick, right?
Yeah, he gets editing. It's like the last 15 minutes of True Detective, man. This thing goes out live.
But it's no favorite because it's like he operates a kissing booth. So he'll like say, let's go have some time together. And then he'll pull them under a corner and throw a blanket over their legs and then start, and say, okay, I'll see you later. And then he goes, oh, why don't you come with me? And then he goes back to the same bench with the same blanket and starts making out with this girl. So how do you tell
who your favorite broke, is? If it ain't broke, man. Yeah,
so that's so. Why I'm saying to you, he ain't looking for love.
Well, here's the thing. He
this
saying,
is how he loves.
My daughter, Camila, she's everything to me, and I need a mother for her. I need a woman who's a mother.
All the women he's got left couldn't be further away than good
stepmom
material.
There's a mother. There's a Florida mother. There's a mother from Florida.
Yeah, but she's not going to win. She keeps her around because she's like the den mother and keeps all the other girls in
check.
You're
right. You know where they've kept her child? No. While she's been gone? In a bucket of Hooters chicken wings. The child eats. It's great.
But look, he let the NBA former NBA Cassandra,
yeah.
The 21-year-old NBA dancer who got knocked up from an NBA player.
Rodney Stuckey, to be exact.
Yeah. Okay.
Stuckey.
She's got a child out of wedlock with an NBA player. He let her go because he thought he could feel there was no magic.
Go be with your son, Trey.
Go be with your son.
Be with him, even though the flight home is 40 days. I want you to see your son immediately.
So we've got crazy nurse Nikki left. We've got crazier Claire.
Nikki, nurse. And I, you know,
Claire, the one he boned in Vietnam.
Okay.
She's still around.
Well, she's denying those allegations. She even went on people.com and said
nothing happened. Stop it.
She said nothing happened.
We
Kevin.
All know better.
Kevin, she said nothing
okay,
happened.
Okay, I hear
did you.
You
see the story on People Bean? On people.com, Claire Crawley, the Sacramento hairdresser, said that her and Juan Pablo only went and took a bath in the ocean.
This is when they had sex in the ocean and you didn't buy it, right?
Nor did my wife.
Okay.
Are you buying it now?
I told my wife, there's no way a man is virile enough to do that. She believed me.
Well,
you're married to you. That's why.
I can only have sex in a hospital bed with a certain kind of...
So where are they headed?
That raises, yeah, up and
raises
down.
Me up. Where are they headed next week, Ralph? Are they still going around the world?
No, back to Miami.
Miami!
It's Juan Pablo's hometown of Miami.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll meet Camila.
There's going to be sweaty thigh rubbing.
Is this the final episode, though?
No!
I mean, are we
this
done?
Is, look,
we're not even up to hometown dates
we
yet.
We powered through Juanuary.
It didn't
we
feel
are
like
now
that.
Juanuary was a year long. Juanuary is upon us.
Okay.
And we are headed toward March. Starch. The point is, we have a long way to go. This is a marathon, not a sprint.
Okay. The rest of the Bachelor reports will be on the Ralph and Petros podcast, is my understanding, though, right?
That's correct. Actually, it's come to my attention that we are going to be continuing this in a much greater capacity as The Bachelor grows under Chris Harrison.
Yes.
As, like, you know, like an hour in the middle of the show. Like a centerpiece of the Kevin and Bean.
Yeah, it'll be the core, really, of the show.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
You ever see that movie, The Core, with the guy who played...
That'll never happen.
With the guy who played the Frankenstein?
Yeah, Aaron Eckhart.
Yeah, with all the stitches. Sure. Thank you for smoking, guy.
Right. Aaron Eckhart.
Core of the show.
Yes.
Okay. The flaming hot.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Heart of the show.
Never little drill happen. To the Bachelor, center of the Kevin and Bean show.
Bachelor
a nuclear device inside of it.
Monday nights at 8 on ABC.
If this show had a sternum.
Right. We got it.
We
understand.
Would be
we'll
on
see it.
Top of it.
Right.
Resuscitating it.
See you next Tuesday.
To the rhythm
thanks,
of
guys.
Staying alive.
You know, when you say that,
see you next
I feel
Tuesday.
Like you're saying something else.
That's right.
I do not.
Oh, yes. That was The Bachelor. Report.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 7:53.
Academy Award-nominated actor Barkhad Abdi joins us in studio right after the top of the hour. He, of course, from Captain Phillips. Ralph, I was just thinking, so many actors like you know, move to Hollywood and take all the small roles and work their way up and get in the movies and, you know, slum in radio if they have to.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's first acting job ever. He's in Captain Phillips and gets nominated for an Academy Award. What's that deal?
He's great in the role.
Yeah, he sure is. It's a good role.
And
it's amazing
really
story.
I hate on him. I don't think I was up for the role of the Somali pirate. I don't believe we were
competing. Don't sell yourself short,
I don't think
man.
We were competing for that role.
Dude, you're that good. Come on.
So, no, it's great when the right actor meets the great role and magic happens when it's...
Yeah, very remarkable Hollywood dream story. That's for sure. So we'll talk to Barkhad right after the top of there. First, we're up here with the Showbiz Beat on a Tuesday.
Congratulations to Queen... This is kind of nuts.
Queen the Band?
Queen the Band, their greatest hits album, released in 1981, is the top-selling album in the UK of all time.
Okay.
Okay. But it's just reached another milestone. It's the first album in the UK to sell more than 6 million copies. That means 10% of the entire population of the UK owns that record.
Wow.
That's crazy, right?
They lost a step.
Yeah, I don't think that's a good recording. I don't see why it's falling off the shelves. But more music news. Whitney Houston fans are a lot like Bean.
Bad?
Yes. And obsessed with her death. There's a problem with the Beverly Hilton. They keep getting constant requests and reservations to stay in the Whitney Houston death room.
That's a weird thing.
Beverly Hilton's complaining that the Whitney Houston fans are demanding to stay exactly where she died, and then often, they said, will reenact her final hours with lots of drugs, alcohol, and even take nude photos in the tub.
Crack is whack.
Apparently, the management there has decided enough is enough, and they are renovating all the rooms on that floor in the hopes that no one will be able to figure out which one Whitney met her demise in. So, that's creepy, right?
Yeah, that's creepy.
It is. Oh, listen to Bean.
Yeah, right. I think it's creepy.
No, I did not enjoy my stay there that night. I expected more.
This just reminds me of any time a house becomes notorious, like where OJ used to live and everything. They pretty much have to tear it down and rebuild something else on the spot so that, you know, just to stop people from coming by and taking pictures of it.
But you're the death collector.
You love death.
You've got the John Wayne Gacy's original artwork hanging in your home.
I don't think I would go to the Beverly Hilton and stay in the Whitney Houston death suite. I don't think I would.
You draw a line with the...
I'm not weaked out by love. It. I'm just not that interested in it.
Not enough death there? It's only one person.
Only one person. He wants mass murder. Since the Roots are moving to The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Seth Meyers needs a band when he takes over for Jimmy on Late Night, and The Hollywood Reporter announced yesterday that it's already taken care of.
The Armenian comedian.
Yes, the house group will be Robot Man, Magic Robot, or whatever the name of his band is this week.
I don't even remember. I think it was Metal Man, wasn't it?
Metal Man. Yeah. His house group will be called the 8G Band, led by Fred Armisen.
What?
His former SNL castmate and Portlandia star Fred Armisen, who was a professional musician long before he switched into comedy full-time.
Huh.
Will be the leader of the band. Fred was a drummer for the New York City punk band Trenchmouth in the 80s and also played percussion for Blue Man Group in the 90s. He plays guitar and he sings, and he will be the leader of the band for Seth Meyers on Late Night.
How about that?
Interesting.
And that also makes him available for Seth Meyers sketches if they want to do
course,
that, too,
I'm
which
sure
I think is
planning
smart.
On that, using him as an actor and comedian as well. Speaking of Jimmy Fallon's move to The Tonight Show, which will happen after the Olympics... They've announced his guest list for the first week. Not too shabby. Will Smith and U2 on Monday.
Okay.
Jerry Seinfeld and Kristen Wiig with Lady Gaga on Tuesday.
Okay.
Bradley Cooper and Tim McGraw on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
First Lady Michelle Obama, Will Ferrell, and Arcade Fire on Thursday.
Wow.
Will Glenda be there?
Is Glenda on the list?
Glenda was not on the list, but Justin Timberlake will be the main guest on Friday's show.
Wow.
That's
so
great.
That's
week.
The first week.
That's a pretty good week.
Not a bad week.
Yeah.
Mr. Richie Ramone.
No, I think he had to cancel. It's too bad.
Wild Cherry.
And they're doing a revival on Broadway of a legendary play, Raisin in the Sun. Denzel Washington will be starring, which I think is odd casting because the lead in that... play is traditionally a young African-American.
Mm-hmm.
I believe Denzel will be playing younger than his actual age of 59. But the interesting news is that his wife, the actress playing his wife, is 64. His mother. The actress playing his mother is 64. So she's only 5 years older than Denzel is in the play.
That's weird.
That is weird. But I guess he will play younger and she will play older. Diane Carroll, the actress from... White Collar, and of course, many, many years in television and film. She was supposed to be in it, but she has pulled out. She's being replaced by LaTanya Richardson Jackson, who, of course, is the wife of Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh.
Oh.
Or No, Samuel L. Jackson. That's right, Samuel L. Jackson. That's right. She's the wife of Samuel L. Jackson. I always get those two mixed up. Much like Sam Rubin from KTLA. Do we have time for that audio?
We do. We always have time for that.
We'll make time for that, right? In case you missed it, yesterday morning on the KTLA morning show, Sam Rubin was supposed to be talking to Samuel L. Jackson about RoboCop. He decided to go off the reservation and show how clever he was by talking about Sam's Super Bowl commercial, which, of course, did not exist. It was Lawrence Fishburne who did the Super Bowl commercial, reprising his role as Morpheus from the Matrix films. Sam took umbrage, I think, to the fact that Sam Rubin was confusing him with another black actor who also happened to be famous.
Working for Marvel, the Super Bowl commercial. Did you get a lot of reaction to that Super Bowl commercial?
What Super Bowl commercial?
Oh, you know what? My mistake.
You're as crazy as the people on Twitter.
Right.
I'm not Lawrence Fishburne.
That's my fault. Oh, I know boy. That. That was my fault. My mistake. You know what?
We don't all look alike.
Father, you're exactly
we may be
right.
All black and famous, you but are we all guilty. Don't look alike.
I am guilty.
I am
guilty.
He thought you were guilty. Bob Dylan.
Right.
You're the entertainment reporter?
I know.
You're the entertainment reporter right. For this station?
Flog.
And you don't know the difference between me and Lawrence Fishburne?
My mistake. I apologize. Really, my big mistake. Let's talk about...
That must be a very short line for your job.
I'll say it. No, it probably would not be hard to get another person to sit right here. Let's talk about RoboCop.
Oh, hell no.
Really? Really?
I apologize.
I'm the other guy. But I'm the other guy. The other one. What's in your wallet?
Right. Yeah. That's it. That's exactly right.
There's more than one black guy doing a commercial.
There it is. No question about that.
I'm the what's in your wallet black guy.
Okay.
He's the car black guy.
There it is.
Morgan Freeman is the other credit card black guy. You only hear his voice, though, so there. You probably won't confuse him with Lawrence Fishburne.
You're 100% right. To RoboCop,
there's
you a
heavyweight black guy that's like putting cash down in the seats in a baseball stadium, but he's also the black guy that turns off the house, the water, and the lights when his kid tells him the house is cool. Right. I'm not that guy either.
Do we want to do a list of all the people that you're not?
And I've actually never done a McDonald's or a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial.
Fair enough.
I know that's surprising.
Right. Fair enough.
Oh, man.
To the original...
And I'm the only black guy in RoboCop that's not a criminal.
Okay.
Other than Michael K. White.
Yeah. Awesome.
Magic television.
Should we make a list of everyone? No, sorry. You don't get to make jokes and try to be clever and funny when you just need to sit there and take your beating, Sam Rubin.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
That's what President Obama said about
that's right.
Today's celebrity birthdays. Actress Tina Louise is 80. Burt Reynolds, 78 years old. Sheryl Crow, 52. Jennifer Aniston turns 45 years old. Damian Lewis is 43. Surfer Kelly Slater is 42. Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park and Fort Minor is 37. Brandy's 35. Kelly Rowland of Destiny's Child celebrates her 33rd birthday. Aubrey O'Day of Danity Kane celebrates her 30th birthday. And actor Taylor Lautner celebrates 22 years. Is that dog years or is that people years? Do we know? Because he was the dog in
Twilight.
Oh,
that's a good question. I don't know how to
do
that.
A little research. Yeah. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
About an hour away from getting you on the standby boarding list for K-Rock's World Tour 2014 Destination number 2. It's Vampire Weekend along with tons of other groups at Lollapalooza in Sao Paulo, Brazil. That's at 9:10 this morning here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Details at K-Rock.com. And we're just moments away from Oscar-nominated actor Barkhad Abdi from Captain Phillips. He'll be here in about 10 minutes.
I guess the Pebble Beach is one of the biggest golf tournaments of the year, right?
Yeah, it's
yes,
a big one.
Yes, absolutely. It's a big one.
I don't know if you heard the Ralph Showbiz beat, but he brought us the story of Clint Eastwood saving a man's life. And I think it was the man that runs Pebble Beach.
Clint is Clint's big in that part of California. Remember, he used to be the mayor of Carmel, but he is the chairman of something called the Monterey Peninsula Foundation. And that foundation has raised over $100 million for charity as the host of the PGA Tour event there at Pebble Beach. So he's very actively involved with it. And he was at a charity dinner the other night, and somebody started choking. And Clint Eastwood is a guy who sprung into action to save the dude's life. He'd never given the Heimlich before in his life, but he saw this guy choking, and he stepped into action and saved his life. Clint is a hero on and off the screen. And we wanted to find out more about that night, and I believe we have the Oscar-winning actor on the phone with us right now. Hi, Mr. Eastwood.
What the hell do you want?
We're just calling to follow up on this story that's been reported about you saving a man's life the other night.
Yeah. Okay.
That happened?
Seems like you've got all the details already.
Well, I mean, it's not...
What kind of goddamn follow-up do you need?
It's not the same as hearing it from you. Who is this person that you saved? Is it somebody you knew? Is he sitting at your table?
Stephen John is his name.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
The director of the tournament there at Pebble Beach.
Okay. Okay.
The PGA event that we were celebrating at that party when it all happened.
And you noticed that he was choking, or did he get your attention? How did it play out?
Well, I was having a conversation with an empty chair.
Like you still do?
Stephen by the buffet table. Looked like he was having a hard time breathing.
Right.
He made the international sign for choking.
Uh-huh.
Which is raising your hands up to your neck.
Right.
And I said to him, seeing as that's a piece of sharp cheddar cheese, the most dense cheese in the world, you got to ask yourself a question. Do you feel choky? What do you, punk? And then I shot him.
You didn't shoot him.
I don't think that's what
you
happened.
You didn't. You gave him the Heimlich.
I shot him dead.
According to the report, you gave him the Heimlich, and he survived because of you. You saved his life.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
You must have shot someone else dead.
I shot someone else dead.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate.
It was a what?
The hat check. Girl.
Hat check.
Oh, that's a shame.
I got behind Steve, and I placed my fist under his rib cage.
Right.
And I nestled up close behind him. What's so goddamn funny?
Just the word nestled. Go ahead.
I put my fist under his rib cage and lifted him off the floor.
Right.
Pressing the air from his diaphragm up into his windpipe.
Mm-hmm.
And that forced the piece of cheese out. The cheese flew into the air, and I shot it.
You didn't shoot the cheese.
I don't think there was any gun.
Skeet.
Why would you shoot the cheese out of the air?
Into a million pieces of cheese crumbs.
I don't know why you would have a gun.
My aim is goddamn excellent.
No one's questioning your aim, Clint.
I hope not.
What did you shoot there?
I don't know.
Okay. The impressive thing in all the reports is that you are, what, 83 years old, Mr. Eastwood?
That's right. I'm 83. You got a problem with that?
I don't have a problem with it at all, but the fact that you were able to lift a 200-plus-pound man in the air three times while giving him the Heimlich, you must be in incredible shape.
Well, I keep fit. I'm busy lifting all the baggage my ex-wife came with. Keeps me busy.
Right.
Boy, was she a lunatic.
You weren't a fan of that reality show?
No, I wasn't. Nor was I a fan of the marriage.
Yeah.
So,
I'm sorry,
it
didn't work out.
Yes. Yes.
First of all, wear sunscreen.
Okay.
But a second piece of advice is don't marry a young woman when you're in your 80s.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
If you chase that... you'll end up worse than Steve Johns with a piece of cheese in your throat.
Mm, okay. No one wants that.
That seems bad.
No one around to give you the Heimlich so you can choke a crazy woman out of your throat. They stay there forever.
Yeah,
they make a lot of money.
Wait, the crazy woman is stuck in your throat?
Unless you shoot her.
You can't shoot her.
I know. I wish I could, though.
I guess what I'm saying is you make it look too easy to be an actor if you can go from nowhere to your first acting role and you're nominated for an Oscar and a Golden Globe and a Screen Actors Guild and a BAFTA. Ladies and gentlemen, Barkhad Abdi from Captain Phillips joins us in studio.
Thank you.
Here on the Kevin and Bean Show. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Thank you.
What a crazy couple of years you've had. My God, right?
Yeah, I know.
Well, let's go back to the beginning, Barkhad. You were born in Somalia, right?
Yep.
But you did not grow up there. You grew up in Yemen. What was that like? Do you remember much about that before you moved to America?
You know, I remember. I learned how to play soccer in Yemen. And,
okay, you learned how to play soccer. Did you learn to speak English before you moved to America as well?
No. I know how to speak Arabic in Somalia at the time when I came to the U.S.
Okay. And how old were you when you moved to the United States?
About 14.
And why did your parents make that trip?
Because we won the visa lottery to the U.S.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
So you're living in Yemen, and you're thinking, there's got to be a better place we can live than Yemen.
Yes.
And your parents apply for a lottery, and they get selected, so you're able to come to the U.S. legally, and that's what you decided to do. Now, how did your parents decide to take you to Minnesota, of all places?
There is a large Somali community in Minnesota.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. So that's the main reason we went there.
Did they think about the weather at all? Was that a factor? Because that's
I don't think they did.
They didn't
at
all.
Is that a terrible shock?
Shaking his head like, yeah, that's...
Like, why did these people come here?
In the winter, that's a terrible place.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's really cold up there.
And what did you think? How did you, what was it like for you as a teenage Barkhad Abdi, now in a, I assume, a public school in Minnesota? Mm-hmm. How were you received? What was the reaction like from other kids in the school? What was it like for you day to day?
Well, the good thing was the school that I started in, it was Roosevelt High School. It had a very large Somali teens and Ethiopians. And, you know, it was a lot of mixture of different cultures. So that helped me just fit right in and just...
Absolutely. That's a great transition, because if you'd have moved to a school in Texas where you were the only Somali, it would have been very tough for you.
Then it would have been tough, absolutely. Yeah.
Did they help you learn the language?
You know, yeah, the language will come just by interacting with different peoples, listening to music, stuff like that.
Yeah, I heard that Jay-Z helped you a lot. Listening to Jay-Z records helped you learn to speak English. Is that true, or is that something publicists made up to make you sound cool?
No, it wasn't only Jay-Z, you know, but, you know, I used to listen to Jay-Z a lot.
And you would literally try to figure out what he was saying?
Sometimes I memorize the lines without me not knowing what it means.
I'm still trying to figure out what Jay-Z's saying on most of his songs, by the way. All right, so you graduate from high school, and now here you are, a young man. Now you're American, I imagine, and you're starting your life as an adult. What do you decide to do, Barkhad?
I decided to go to college.
Okay, tell me about that.
And where did you go?
Morehead State.
Okay. Oh, a real school. Okay. And what were you studying? What did you think your career was going to be before you decided to act?
I was studying... I was just taking my generals, but I wanted to get my engineering degree.
Engineering? Okay. So how did this tremendous right turn happen in your life, that you went from a guy on a path to be an engineer to auditioning for a motion picture?
You know, I just had some problems with paying the college tuition.
Sure.
Yeah, the loans. I mean, I didn't get...
That's a very American thing. We all do that.
Yeah, so when I had that problem... I decided to take a time out and work on, you know, what I love, and that's camera and filmmaking. And so I decided to work on that for a few years, and I worked trying to get an independent film of my own, which I couldn't get out. So
you tried to write and do everything for your own film.
Yeah.
Well, that's easy.
Sounds easy.
No, it doesn't actually.
Were there a lot of people, friends and family, coworkers, who said, "Wow, it sure is tough to make it as an actor in Hollywood. You know, that's too big a dream for you, Barkhad. You shouldn't try that. You should come up with something more realistic."
You know, I didn't tell anyone that I'm going to become an actor.
Oh, really?
So, it still, there's a lot of people that came to me and told me that. Yeah.
I'm sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, had you had any acting roles at all, even small roles, before you went out for Captain Phillips?
No.
Not in school or anything?
Nothing. The only thing I can recall is a video production class that I took in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, how were you able to, I mean, they put out a casting call because they, Paul Greengrass knew he needed a bunch of Somalis to play the pirates in the film. So did he go to Minnesota and look for people, or did you guys all have to come to Hollywood to audition?
No, he went to Minnesota.
Okay. So there was just an open casting call. If you're a Somali, come read for this movie.
Yeah.
What was that like for, we need to take a break. It's your story is so crazy. Academy Award nominee Barkhad Abdi is here from Captain Phillips. We need to take a break and we'll be right back.
He seems like such a nice man. He doesn't look like the type of man who's going to take over the show and I'm the captain now and throw us into the ocean. None of that. He seems like a very nice man.
It was a movie.
Actor Barkhad Abdi is here on the Kevin and Bean Show, Oscar nominated for the film Captain Phillips. By the way, let's give away some copies of the movie right now, before I forget, on Blu-ray. If you want to own it, and you should because it's great, call us right now at 1-800-520-1067. Callers 20 through 24. You win this hour from the Kevin and Bean Show. So when we had to take a break, Barkhad, you were telling us that they had a call for Somalis. Paul Greengrass, the director of the movie, was looking for people to play the pirates, and you showed up for the audition. What was that audition process like? What did they have you do?
You know, it was a lot of people there, and first day I was asked easy questions, and they gave me a script, and they assigned me to a character, Musa, and I had to study that. I come back the next day, and I auditioned by myself, and after that I was told to audition to be part of a group of four. And there, the three guys I was standing next to, and after we realized we each had different characters, we formed our own group, and
oh, no kidding.
And we auditioned, and we went home, and we practiced. Because one thing we all shared is that we all wanted it to be part of this real bad.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, we auditioned, and a few times after we auditioned, we got a call from the casting director, Francine Midler, to L.A. to meet the director, Paul Greengrass.
Tell you at that point you had it?
We all got it.
And that's did you crazy. Know at that time, once you saw the script and went for the audition, did you know that it was a Tom Hanks movie yet?
You know, they said that Tom Hanks movie when it was on TV, when the casting was happening.
Oh,
okay.
So you saw
so you
that?
Know.
Yeah, they said before there was no movie name. I don't know what's mm-hmm. the name, you know. The name of the movie.
Right. Oh, I see. I got you. Okay, wow. So here's the thing. For folks who haven't seen the movie, I mean, Barkhad's role is incredibly complex because you, not only is there a lot of action involved and, you know, a lot of things that you have to do physically, but it's really an emotional arc because you are desperate and you're scared and you're, you know, you have all these different emotions that you have to show on your face and you're not a professional actor. Was it difficult? I know that sounds like a dumb question, but was it difficult for you to get the tone right day after day, scene after scene, or did it require many, many takes of some of these shots?
Of course, you know, it was difficult to get the motions, but each day was a adventure. You know, I had so much fun shooting this film, honestly, but each day we would have a different obstacle to get it out, and Paul Greengrass would figure out a way to tell me and you know how to tackle that, so it was just fun.
The line that everybody knows you from, of course, is "I am the captain now," and I want to play the clip and then I want you to tell us what it's like to boss Tom Hanks around. Because he's of course the star of the movie too.
We got a problem. We pushed the ship too hard. We're off the grid. That means the computer's now offline.
Captain,
the ship's broken.
Captain, no one gets hurt if you don't play no game.
It's the ship's broken. We had to go.
Nobody gets hurt. Easy. Hey! Look at me.
Sure.
Look at me.
Sure.
I'm the captain now.
Sweet. Look at me! Now, at some point did you say, hey, Hanks, dial back the Boston accent, dude. Seriously. No one talks like that. You were separated from Tom Hanks largely before you started shooting your scenes together. They didn't want you guys to become friends first, right?
Right.
They did that on purpose because, just to make it more authentic?
Yeah, to be, so we don't just know each other.
Yeah.
So what, you're obviously, you know, you live in the world, you know it's Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
What's that like for you when you come face to face with him on that first day of filming and you guys are going toe to toe as actors?
You know, it was terrifying. It was terrifying to just stay in character and do the scene right because, you know, that scene was just so big. And to me, you know, that was like the biggest scene in the movie for me because that was the first scene that I actually had to use lines and doing it against Tom Hanks. So I'm nervous and I'm just trying to calm down and get it together. So that line came out, I'm the captain now, because I wanted to tell Tom that I am the lead.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And how'd that go over? Was that it? Wait, that was in the script though.
That was in the script.
It wasn't in the script?
Really?
No. Wait, yeah. I'm the captain now?
Your most famous line wasn't in the script. That's awesome.
Really?
That is amazing.
What?
Wow, I'd never heard that
He's
before.
Improving on his first day.
On his first movie with Tom Hanks. Exactly. How did Tom Hanks treat you? He's a dick, right?
No. Tom's the best. You know that.
unbelievable. So you go through and you make this movie, and every day is terrifying, and it's the hardest work you've ever done in your life. What did you think when you saw it all cut together and saw the film? Were you amazed at what a great movie it is?
Yeah, of course. I was amazed. I had to watch it again just to fully understand it, yeah.
How do you learn about your character? It's not like there's schools in Somalia saying, become a pirate here. I mean, how do you study that?
Yeah,
how
were
do
you familiar with some of that just because of people you knew?
No, just you hear stories of piracy over, you know, just people talking about it. But
nobody comes out and says, hey, everyone, I'm a pirate. You want to learn?
No.
So how
There's
do you...
such a thing. But, you know, we had some trainings. Before the film shoot, we had some trainings of swimming, guns, skiffs. We had about a month and a half of training on just getting used to what does need to be used daily. Yeah.
When you were going through that training, did you have a fear of, I need to not screw up because I have this part and I might still not make it to the movie?
I was really scared the second that Paul Greengrass told us we got that part.
Just frightened.
That's when I started getting nervous.
Yeah, once it's yours, once they've given it to you, then they can take it away. Yeah. So, of course, yeah.
We heard rumors about people getting, you guys specifically, getting sick in the scenes where they shot it, where you were in that little lifeboat.
In the lifeboat,
thing.
Yeah. Oh, that
Is
looked
that
terrible.
True? That it life, looked nauseating.
That lifeboat, yeah, is really one of the scenes inside the lifeboat. The camera crew got sick on us. So.
On you? Seriously? Did you say on you?
On us.
They threw up on you.
They didn't throw up. They got sick.
Okay.
So, what's your? I know we're almost out of time here, Barkhad, but and of course the Academy Awards are coming up. I believe on March the 2nd. I want to say is when you'll be in the audience there, waiting to find out if you win an Oscar. What's your life been like since the movie came out and you're so recognizable? Not just here in Hollywood with acting, but I mean on the street, everybody knows who you are. That's quite a change for you.
Of course, you know, this movie changed my life completely. You know, it's just how people approach me, how people talk to me, you know. And I'm really grateful for everything that's been happening, and I want to keep acting.
What do they say when they approach you, most people?
Good things.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just love the movie, and
love
you were great.
Love the movie, yeah.
Have you, I know you left Somalia as a very young man, but you must be some sort of national hero back then. Have you gotten any kind of reaction from that country, from people who are so proud of you for the way you represent them?
Yes. You know, people that I see in the streets and people on the websites, people show me a lot of love.
Sure, yeah. And you are, Barkhad was telling us during the song that he is moving to Los Angeles next month, and this is now your career. No more driving a limo, no more selling cell phones. You're in show business now.
That's right.
You got to get some people.
you need some people to start ordering
around.
You think he hasn't thought of that yet, Bean?
I'm just saying, that's move to town and get some people. Well, Barkhad, how excited are you about the Academy Awards? You just go in that night and be in part of something you've probably seen on TV, ever since you moved to this country. What's that going to be like for you?
This is going to be very exciting. I'm taking my friend Faisal Ahmed in the film with me. So this is going to be exciting, and can't wait.
Can't wait. Can't wait for you. So happy for you. What an unbelievable story and what a tremendous movie. And you just did such a great job. And I hope your dreams continue to come true and you find lots of work in the movies. Thank you, Barkhad. We really enjoyed talking to you.
Thank you, Ben.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You're listening to The Kevin and Bean Show at 8:56.
So glad you're in here, Ralph. I need some backup. Kevin has just been exasperating.
What are you talking about now?
He wants to go to find where Shirley Temple Black, where the funeral is, and kick her in the head. I mean, I just think, why so much hate for America's sweetheart?
She made everyone happy. She got America through the Depression by giving them something to smile and cheer about standing in line for soup.
Don't I hate enough without you guys adding fake hate on top of me?
I just wish you didn't hate Shirley Temple.
I don't.
So much.
I do too. She's a sweet lady, by all accounts, a sweet lady, and you're glad she's dead, and that makes me sad.
I wish she lived forever.
America's favorite little princess.
Time for the Showbiz Beat now here on a Tuesday morning. Ralph Garman joins us.
What was your favorite Shirley Temple movie, Kevin? Would it be Bright Eyes, Little Colonel, or other one? Spank My Hinder?
Yeah, that's a good
one you like. You're horrible.
I didn't hate her. I didn't say anything about her.
You hated
her. You assumed I would, and you attacked.
We said, you know, have you ever seen her? God, no, you said. As if she was something to be reviled and repelled.
Plus, she was an old lady, so you automatically hated her for that, for living past 50.
She did pass away yesterday at the age of 85. Remarkable life of achievement, really. As an actor, as a tiny little girl, she was the biggest movie star in the world. Then she grew up, left the industry, became a diplomat, worked for the UN, a mother, grandmother, great-grandmother, had the same husband for 55 years. By all accounts, just lived a great life. And Kevin hated her.
I didn't hate
like
her.
A monkey.
Never saw her getting out of a limo, flashing her crotch, none of that.
Well, if you knew where to go. I knew where to hang out.
Certain street corners.
Yeah, I'd catch a little of the Good Ship Lollipop every once in a while. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, stop making that noise.
It's a sweet trip to the candy shop. That's all I got to tell you, boys. She had animal crackers in her soup. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know what's worse, Kevin hating her or you loving her too much.
Don't hate her.
I hate plenty.
Stop making those noises.
He's using the thumb, isn't he? He's showing us the thumb again.
Oh, the thumb. I missed the thumb. You won't find Blondie anywhere near the Sochi Olympics. God damn it.
Were they invited?
How does that work?
Actually, they were. They were offered a gig during the Red Rocks Festival at the Games this week. But Debbie Harry sent back the written offer. It's pretty spectacular. There's a picture of it online. Billboard.com's got it. They sent her a contract saying we'd like you to come, and this is what we'll pay you, and this will be the rider and the contract, and, you know, to play in Russia. Just giant Sharpie. She wrote, pass. And then underneath that wrote, human rights. Line, just underlined nice. And mailed it back to them. So
I love it.
Apparently she's not too pleased with the current political atmosphere, especially for the gay and lesbian community there in Russia. And she let them know in no uncertain terms she would not be performing with her band there at Sochi. That's a shame, because she missed out on all the brown water.
Yeah.
She would have enjoyed that.
She could have got pink eye from Costas.
She could have got
whatever that is.
Her own pack of stray dogs.
Right.
Slept in a windowless hotel room with a construction worker. There's a lot to offer.
No door handle.
A lot to offer.
Locked in an elevator.
This time of year.
Do yourselves a favor and search for Sochi problems. Hashtag Sochi problems. You'll laugh.
A lot of good stuff going on there. Fox News doesn't like the Lego movie.
Oh, come on. Now what?
It's true.
Come on.
They did a big piece.
Now what?
On how the bad guy in the Lego movie is a businessman. And they say Hollywood, once again, attacking the CEOs of corporations and millionaires, making them the bad guys. Fox Business News co-host Charles Payne said, why is the head of a corporation who hires people... People go to work there, they pay their rent, they pay their mortgage. Why would the CEO be the villain? The villain of the movie, if you've seen, is a guy who goes by the name of Lord Business. It turns out Lord Business runs a totalitarian surveillance state, much like Kim Jong-il or Kim Jong-un. And so the movie seems more anti-murderous despots than they are really businessmen. But Fox is upset. Saying it goes all the way back to It's a Wonderful Life, where poor Mr. Potter was the bad guy. All
well, he was a slumlord.
He was trying to make an honest buck, Bean, that's all. Nothing wrong with that. That's the American way.
What's happening?
The director of the Lego movie tweeted in response, art deserves many interpretations, even wrong ones, he said about his film. So I guess he's not taking it too seriously.
Well, Fox should be happy that the American economy is now going to be kept afloat by how many Legos they're going to sell as a result of this movie.
I should have gotten a Lego business when I had a chance. I was right there. It was right there in front of me, and I passed.
Is that right?
This guy said, hey, you want to go halvesies on a Lego store? And I said, no. All my money's tied up in Lincoln Logs. So,
boy, you backed the wrong horse.
Yeah, I made the wrong choice there, didn't I? Sean Lennon, did you see him at the... who am I asking, Kevin?
No.
Bean, did you see Sean Lennon at the Beatles tribute there, the Grammys Beatles
tribute? I still
haven't
watched it.
What the what?
Still haven't seen it. Been very busy. Had Downton Abbey to catch up on first.
Well, when your testicles drop and you decide you want to watch the Beatles special...
He's looking more and more like his old man every day, though.
It's nuts. It's crazy. It's uncanny. Between him and Donnie Harrison, just spooky.
Yeah, it's like they're still alive.
Look like their dads. But he was seated next to his girlfriend, Charlotte Kemp Mool, at the event. Lovely, lovely girl. And it turns out they're in a band together called The Ghost of a Sabretooth Tiger. And they've got a new record they'll be releasing called Midnight Sun in April. It's a follow-up to a vinyl EP they put out on Record Store Day last year. And so it looks like Sean's getting into the family business. His half-brother, Julian, of course, who was a singer-songwriter, still is, had a semi-successful career. I was wondering why he was not at the event.
Julian?
Julian Lennon, the son of John and Cynthia Lennon.
Yoko wouldn't allow it.
That's what I'm guessing. I think there must be bad blood there between the first family and the second family, and perhaps he was not welcome to the event, which is sad because there was obviously a tribute to his dad and his legacy. But he was not in attendance. Thought that was odd. Thought it was odd, too, they didn't invite Ringo. I thought Ringo should have been invited.
You're making a joke, right?
Yes.
Okay. Ringo was here. You don't know, Bean. You didn't watch.
Oh, God. Bean's really busy. It was just Paul. Just Paul saying, I did it all myself. Basically, so Ringo's outside knocking. I'd like to come in, please. I used to play the drums on those records.
So he was outside knocking on the door, was he?
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Do not do this. This is a step you don't want to take. Do not do it.
Don't.
No. Get off it.
So Ringo,
don't do it.
I'm not gonna just pause. Just let him in.
He never laughs that hard.
No one ever makes nonsense. Him laugh harder than he does.
Come on. We can't even put that in the file because no one can understand it.
I'll never take it back either. Speaking of that Beatles special on CBS and Downton Abbey on PBS and the Olympics on NBC, all of those television shows were beat out in the ratings on Sunday night.
Yes, they were.
By a little TV show called The Walking Dead.
Yes, they were. Kill Carl.
Beat them in the coveted 18 to 49-year-old age demographic that advertisers covet so much. Overall, the numbers were different. If you look at the total numbers, Olympics did better than everything with about 25 million total viewers. But AMC Zombies pulled in just about 16 million viewers.
Wow.
Beatles only drew 14 million, and Downton Abbey pulled in 10 million. So, just to show you what a juggernaut that zombie show is. Gotta love it. Today's celebrity birthdays, Tina Louise. You know her as Ginger from Gilligan's Island, 80 years old today. Burt Reynolds is 78. Sheryl Crow turns 52. Jennifer Aniston is 45. Damian Lewis of Homeland fame, 43 years old. Kelly Slater, the surf legend, is 42. Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park, and also of Fort Minor, is 37 years old. Singer and actress Brandy turns 35. Kelly Rowland of Destiny's Child is 33. Aubrey O'Day is Danity Kane's lovely singer, 30 years old. And Taylor Lautner from Twilight's 22. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Those who caught a shuffleboard on ice are ill-advised.
The magic of Olympic curling. Coming up in about 15 minutes or so here on the Kevin and Bean Show. But first, Kevin, you still playing the Flappy Bird? Your high score is still 8?
Yes. and unfortunately, yes.
Yes. We were talking about...
Here's what happens. Go ahead. The game is so... unbelievably simple. You look at it and you go, this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
And right. 84-year-old could own this game.
But then you have to match in your mind the fact that you can't get four. You know what I mean? And then so that's what keeps you going back. This is so easy.
Because that's ridiculous.
That's ridiculous. But then I lose patience with it really quickly and stop playing.
Oh, I see. Gotcha.
I can't stick with it because I should be better at it, and I'm not. 8 is my high score. 8. That's an absurdly low high score.
We have been talking about Flappy Bird this week. It's been in the news a lot, of course. This is the very popular app. It's a game app on that people play on their phones, and it's been out since May, but in the last couple months it has just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and it is, until it was pulled out of the iTunes store this Saturday, it was the number one most popular app. It was at the top of the charts. It is no longer available for download. And we didn't have much to go on from the creator, a man from Vietnam named Dong Young. He had just put out a couple tweets that he was pulling the thing, but he finally has given an email interview. And here's what he said. Flappy Bird has unexpected effects. It causes addiction in people. I think it is an unexpected problem, and I have had to remove it. So he thinks that people are becoming too addicted to it, and he feels responsible for that. So he pulled the game.
Isn't that as a game maker? The goal?
Yes! That's why this story continues to be so difficult to wrap our heads around, because anyone who's ever tried to invent an app, that's what you want, is so many people using it and loving it. Look, Mark Zuckerberg didn't make Facebook because he didn't want a lot of people on it. That's the goal, is you want a lot of people to use your product. That's how you make money. Hmm. Remember, when we talked about this a couple days ago, this guy was bringing in over $50,000 a day in advertising revenue. $50,000 a day.
That's a lot of money to figure out what to do with, you know?
From Flappy Bird. And now it is gone. But we started talking about it and how obsessed everybody is in the office, and Chip is playing it all the time and Kevin is playing it. And these scores are so low. And Kevin, you did a little poking around and found some people with higher scores online.
I did, yeah.
It turns out that Casey, who works here on the show, she's the one who has her finger on the button for you know, Lisa's potty mouth. She has a friend named Chow, who's on the line with us right now, who may be the best Flappy Bird player that we have heard about personally. Chow, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you?
Thanks. I'm doing well. Good morning, guys. Good morning, Lisa May.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
Have you ever cheated at this game? Did you pick up some of those cheats online?
No, actually. A friend told me about it. I started playing and got addicted. So I just kind of went off.
How long have you been playing Flappy Bird, Chow?
I was told about it maybe about 2 weeks ago.
Okay. Shut up, Bean.
2 weeks ago? And on day one, what was your high score?
Oh, man. I was probably floating around like maybe between 1 and 5 at most.
Right.
Okay. And that seems to be where a lot of people get hung up, is just getting any kind of traction on the game. So what cracked it for you?
You know what, to be honest with you, so I live in the greater Portland area up here, and we've had a couple of snow days.
You spent all day playing that game, didn't you?
Pretty much. I kind of ignored my wife, and then I just hopped on the phone and just started playing.
All right. So how long did it take you to get to 100?
100 took me about a week to get there of just consistently playing a couple hours a day.
All right. And then 200, a couple more days?
That was a little bit longer, just because I was trying to get over that hump of like, man, what's the next level I can take it to?
What's the nonsense in this game, though? This is the frustrating part about it, is that you only get one life. So as soon as you die, the game is over. So if he gets to 101, he's got to start again at zero.
Right. Yeah, there was a couple of times where, like, man, I was like one short of my previous record, and I was ready to throw the phone at the wall. I think what happens is because the game just regenerates so quickly that you can just start the next game up right away, and that's what makes it so addicting. And so I just kept on playing.
Yeah,
right. It's not like you have to take a timeout of 30 minutes and then come back. I mean, you can jump right back in. All right, so 200, and then 300, and then 400.
All right,
and
take it easy, Bean.
And where are you at now? What's your high score now?
477.
What?
Now, have you done any looking around online to see how that compares to other people who are great at the game?
To be honest with you, I haven't. I tried to look on the actual game once, but I couldn't pull up anything. And I think that might have been after the game was shut off.
I see.
I haven't compared myself to anybody else.
What happens in the game once you get up into the 200s and 300s and 400s? Does it change significantly?
You know what? To be honest with you, this last weekend when I started playing and when I got that 477, I was hovering like right around 150. And then I said my goal was 200. And then when I got to 200, I felt like I was locked in, and it just felt smooth. And I said, as I was going along, I was like, well, maybe I could hit 300. Sure enough, 300 came along, and then after 300, I was
now you're just bragging.
400. And
all right,
so on.
All right, whatever. Now you're just bragging. You say you have a wife?
I do, yes.
Do you have kids?
No kids.
No kids. Yep.
Kevin, what was your high score again? I'm sorry. We're talking about Mr. Chow's 477.
You mean in the history of playing the game?
Yeah, the whole time you've been playing. What's your high?
It's 477.
It's 8.
Oh, Kevin's is 8. That's right. Kevin's is 8. So what? It doesn't matter to you because you have the game on your phone and they can't retroactively pull it. But what did you think about what's going on with Flappy Bird, with the creator pulling it and so nobody else can download it?
You know what? When I got a pretty high score of like 180-something, I posted it online on my Facebook. And one of my friends posted that, you know, some link about how it's going to be shutting down. And I think it was Saturday. I was like, man, well, I didn't know if it was going to be shut down on mine as well or not. So I just hopped on. I was like, I'm going to get the best out of this and play as much as I can. But I was really surprised because, yeah, like you guys said, I mean, advertising alone, this guy is making a lot of money. And the people love the game. It's addicting. And I was kind of shocked. But
yeah. Are you going to keep playing it? I mean, at 477, is there a point at which you want to walk away and try something else? Or are you hooked for the foreseeable future?
You know what? I jokingly said to my wife that I should go for 500, but after 477, I was kind of in some physical pain because I had to sit one position the whole time playing that long game to get me there to 477. But
dude, I'm nipping at your heels. You better start sharpening your skills.
Kevin is so close to 10 right now, Chow.
Oh, there you go. Don't give up on your dreams.
Yeah, that's right. Don't give up on your dreams. That's the takeaway from a man who's got 477 on Flappy Bird. Chow, well done, my friend. It's so much better than having sex with your wife to make kids, isn't it?
I don't know about that.
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ.
Fight.
You're listening to the Kevin and Bean Show at 9:45.
I know we have very little time, and Ralph's here with the Showbiz Beat, but why can't we fire Beer Mug? Explain that to me. Like, what's standing in the way?
I've never said that. I've never said all the talk and so little action.
I've been the only one standing in the way.
It's not like he has photos of you with a donkey or anything like that. I mean, he's got nothing on you, right? We can fire him, and it won't come back to bite you in the ass, Kevin.
I think Kevin's afraid he'll be responsible for Beer Mug's suicide if he fires him.
No, it's more self-centered than that. I can't be the worst person here. So I got to have mugs because now
when? Since when?
How dare you?
I mean, performance-wise or personality-wise?
Whichever works.
I pray to be the guy responsible for Beer Mug suicide.
You Bean has no problem being the worst
person. It's a badge of honor. All right, we got to deal with that. First, though, Russ got the Showbiz Beat here on a Tuesday. What's going on?
Well, it is Tuesday. That means new release day. Here's what's available on CD and DVDs. Lego the Movie. The Lego Movie. Original motion picture soundtrack by various artists. I have not seen the film. Is there a popular series?
Yes, Everything Is Awesome. Yeah. A Lonely Island song, I think, is the big breakout hit of that. But apparently the music is Mark Mothersbaugh, and it's very cute, and
good.
He does good work.
Acoustic at the Ryman by Band of Horses. Check out their CD. And Love, Death, Immortality by the Glitch Mob. It sounds like the lamest mafia family ever.
So, we got the Pentangelos coming over, and then, of course, this part of the city goes to the Glitch Mob.
I just don't see him joining the five families anytime soon. DVDs, Ender's Game, Harrison Ford, Asa Butterfield, and Haley Steinfeld star. The Best Man Holiday with Morris Chestnut. Austin Land, Kerry Russell, Jennifer Coolidge. Lisa's looking forward to Austin.
It's not a thing.
I am. I put it in my Netflix.
I'm sure you did. The Counselor with Michael Fassbender, Penelope Cruz, and Brad Pitt. Diana, story of Princess Diana, her life and tragic ending. Naomi Watts stars in that film.
Did that ever come out in theaters, Ralph? Because I sure don't remember it.
I remember it coming
being
out.
Being released.
I think maybe a couple screens someplace, limited releasey kind of thing.
Because we heard about that building up as if it was going to be a big deal.
Yeah, but then there's all kinds of infighting behind the scenes with the producers and the distribution company. Yeah, happens sometimes. Killing Kennedy with Rob Lowe as President John F. Kennedy. Okay. How I Live Now.
I'd love to know. I love presidential stuff.
You know me. I love death and presidents. When the presidents die, it's the best day.
Rob Lowe did an excellent job in that.
Did he sound like Tom Hanks? Was it Captain Phillips?
I want to go to the moon. We need to get the space program going. And you know the boat better than they do. Hide and don't come out until the pirates are gone.
That's the same. You're same right. How I Live Now, Saoirse Ronan. The Armstrong Lie, documentary about Lance Armstrong and his
lie. Hence the name. And Pussy Riot, a punk prayer starring, well, the girls from Pussy Riot, documentary about their political stances and their incarceration and their music. Their music, really, though.
Their music?
That's why you watch it.
Sounds like they had like a four-year-old there at the end.
Well, free speech issues aside, they should have put them in jail.
Oh, come on.
I agree.
TV shows on DVD, Sherlock Season 3, The American Season 1, and Dallas, the complete second season.
Sherlock is awesome, people.
Yeah, Sherlock is a great show if you're not watching that. Shame on you. Yesterday, we talked about Chris Kattan of Saturday Night Live fame and, of course, Night at the Roxbury. Arrested for DUI charges early yesterday morning as he hit a Department of Transportation vehicle on the 101.
That seems bad.
Yeah, another driver phoned in to report that someone in a Mercedes was weaving all over shortly before the accident. No one was injured. Apparently, we jumped to conclusions and assumed he was sauced, but sources are saying he didn't over-imbibe. And that wasn't the cause of the accident, but was booked for getting behind the wheel after taking prescription medication. Now, no word whether it was his prescription or not, but apparently he was hopped up on goofballs at the time. It wasn't booze at
Are
all.
Are goofballs a thing?
Is oh, that yeah, technical? Sure. Hmm. Yeah, that's the generic name.
Oh, generic.
Yeah. I think Goofenex is the brand name if you want to go for the highfalutin. NBC's rolling out Jimmy Fallon's Tonight Show after the Olympics are all said and done. And because Jimmy Fallon has taken the roots with him, I mean, Seth Meyers needs a new band when he takes over Late Night, Jimmy's old show. Hollywood Reporter says it has been announced that the house band will be called the 8G Band and will be led by Seth's former Saturday Night Live castmate and Portlandia star Fred Armisen. Which is a great idea because this way you get Fred Armisen to be in all your sketches and stuff. And he can hug Bruce Willis and things like that.
Sure. Fred Armisen is one of those guys who shows up on a lot of programs and makes all of them better.
He is,
you know, if
he
you
is.
See him come up on Brooklyn Nine-Nine or 30 Rock or whatever he's on, he's always great.
He's a great talent. He was a professional musician before he switched to comedy, by the way. He used to be a drummer for a legendary New York City punk band called Trench Mouth in the 80s, and then he played percussion for the Blue Man Group in the 90s. He also plays guitar and sings. So he will be there, Seth's side, when they make their debut on NBC's Late Night on February the 24th. You can check that out.
That's an interesting choice.
I think so. I think it's a great choice. I think they're going to do very well.
I sure love Jimmy Kimmel's band, Cleto and the Cleto's
band.
Oh,
man. Maybe the best band.
Well,
Paul Schaefer, it's a lot to be said for that band, too. But,
and the Roots. There's nothing wrong with the Roots, either. I mean, they're all great. I mean, a lot of great music music talent in those bands in Late Night.
But Jimmy's band is terrific. N.E. has picked up another 18 episodes of Wahlburgers. That's right. Any burger can just be a burger, but only a Wahlburger is a Wahlburger.
Has it aired yet?
That may not be the slogan. Yeah, hell yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, you're missing out if you're not watching.
Is that animated? Saw it last.
Is it animated?
Is it? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Was it syndicated?
I don't know.
No, I think it's a
live-action reality show. Yeah.
It's a reality series about the Wahlberg family's restaurant in Boston.
I remember hearing
Mark
about
Wahlberg,
it for a long
Donnie
time,
Wahlberg,
but I didn't,
Paul Wahlberg
did not aired.
Is their brother, who's the chef, who really runs the restaurant, but they all participate.
All right.
Wahlburgers.
All right.
Kevin?
All right.
Why do you hate Wahlburgers and Shirley Temple?
I do not.
And, of course, since we're talking about that woman that Kevin hates so much,
I
Shirley
do not
Temple
hate her at all.
Passed away yesterday at the age of 85 years old. This adorable little Moppet was the biggest movie star in the world for like 3 years in a row from ages like 4 to 7. She was a remarkable performer. Polished, talented, charming. America fell in love with her during the Great Depression. And she
pretty little face.
She had a pretty little face. And she got through, she got in a nation that was going through tough times through it by bringing light and happiness and joy into their lives with her singing and her dancing and her acting and her adorableness. And Kevin hated her for it.
I didn't hate her at all.
Her. Why are you making that up? You know, she was one of the first merchandising phenomenons in America.
Oh, my God. Really?
In her heyday, her trademark raked in millions of dollars from records and magazines, children's clothes, breakfast cereals, dolls. You name it. It had her name and face on it, and it was a pretty big deal. And Kevin hated her.
I did not hate
like
her.
Like a monkey.
Super sad.
Today's celebrity birthdays, actress Tina Louise is 80 years old. She, of course, Ginger on Gilligan's Island. Burt Reynolds, 78 years old today. Sheryl Crow's 52. Jennifer Aniston's 45. Damian Lewis is 43 years old. Kelly Slater, surf legend, is 42. Mike Shinoda of Linkin Park. Mike in Park would be a cool band. And Fort Minor, he is 37. Brandy, Moesha herself, is 35. Kelly Rowland of Destiny's Child is 33. Aubrey O'Day from Danity Kane is 30. And Taylor Lautner celebrates his 22nd birthday.
Not if I find you first. I'm going to find you guys and hunt you down.
Action star, Taylor Lautner. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Thank you, Ralph. Tomorrow morning, an all-new Kevin and Bean show. Hank Azaria will be on the show.
Oh, I love that fatherhood show. He has so much.
Talking about his web series, Fatherhood.
I love it.
We have Adam Carolla with This Week in Rage.
Yeah.
We have a brand new internet roundup. And we have McGee talking about, in studio, talking about 3 Days to Kill.
How good does that look, by the way?
It looks great.
I'm not traditionally a Kevin Costner fan.
Yes, that's what I was just going to say.
But he looks terrific in this.
He scares me off of every project, but this looks great.
Looks like a major comeback for him.
So anyway, that's tomorrow morning on an all-new Kevin and Bean.